Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network. Get driven. Stay driven.
Welcome to another episode of Totally Driven Radio. And here's your host, Bane Ragney and Frank Namoli.
Thursday night, and we are live around the globe, and we are totally driven. Welcome to Totally Driven Radio, everybody. This is your favorite night of the week because we are on the air. We're bringing you the best talent from around the world, the funnest talent, the most entertaining talent, and we're bringing you us. My name is Bane Ragney, and we're going to make the official announcement right now. We need to change our opening song. We need to change our opening credits as they roll. The new co-host and permanent co-host of Totally Driven Radio is the one, the only, the man behind the TV Nation, the guru of all things that are boob-tubalicious, Mr. Nick Wilkinson.
Yeah, man, what's up? That's some introduction. I'm thinking in my head, man, what am I going to say next? It's too much.
After talking, we've had we've had Nick on here for the last it's almost 8 weeks now, actually.
Wow.
And after talking with Frank, Frank decided he wanted to actually branch off and do his own show. Which, hey, we were all for. And our focus when we first started this show, over a year ago, was a lot of sports talk. And then once we started getting a lot of guests, our guests veered off into more of a world of a lot of music and TV, movies, and, anything else of entertainment-based. And we kind of gotten away from the sports stuff. And Frank really wanted to focus on the sports stuff. So he said, look, let me do a sports show. He goes, let me do sports, let me do wrestling. So debuting this week, we have the new show, the Man Cave Quarterback Show, with your host Frank Namoli and his co-host, the mayor of Sportstown himself, Mr. Joe Tully. So that is going to be Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock. So Tuesdays is like our sports night now. So you're going to have coming up at 7 o'clock the Box of Rock Show, which is like the man show. They do a lot of sports talk and a lot of men talk. And then at 9 o'clock, you're going to have the sports show with Frank and Joe, and they're going to be talking sports and wrestling. And actually, they have a guest book this week. They have a former ECW, former WWE, former TNA star, now Extreme Rising champion, Mr. Stevie Richards.
Yeah, so, man, that's exciting.
Yeah. So, I'm proud of him. We have another spinoff show. Like, Totally Driven Radio has spun off now two shows. We got the TV Nation, which is becoming a huge success. And now we're going to have the Man Cave Quarterback, which I predict big things for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I think it'll be good. Frank's got, he's left some really big and annoying shoes to fill, but, I'll do my best to step up where I can, and I can't wait for his show. I can't wait to hear him rant about sports and why Diet Coke is bad for you and all that other crazy stuff.
It should be interesting. I can't wait to tune in on Tuesday night. So, but tonight, let's not get past tonight or Sunday. Tonight we got a really big show. As the one and only Mr. Ed Sullivan would say, we got a really big show. So we're going to be kicking it off in about 10 minutes, our first guest will be calling in. And this guy, he's an inspiration to me. I really look up to this guy. And when we started this show, he was like in my top five list of people I wanted on this show to interview. So I'm really excited about this, and I can't wait to talk to him. He's becoming, I mean, Philly's favorite son. He truly is. And he's got a true Rocky story, and he's a person who's got his fingers into everything as well. Oh, excuse me. Between his food business, between music, movies, TV, I mean, he does it all. So I cannot wait to talk to the one, the only, Mr. Tony Luke Jr. will be coming on this hour. Then we have coming up at the 9 o'clock hour, which was actually an interview I taped this morning, from a Canadian hard rocker, Danko Jones, which was a really fun interview, a really cool interview. I learned a lot about Danko, and we talked a lot about him, his band, new music, old music, influences, touring stories. It was a cool interview. It was really fun. He writes an article for like a lot of rock magazines, as well as the Huffington Post. So we were talking about that as well. What else? Oh, we got coming up. We did this last year, and we haven't had this guy on in a long time. So we're going to be stepping back, and we're going to be inviting our old good friend back, the one and only Big Daddy from the 76ers, who's going to be at Wing Bowl tomorrow morning. So we're going to be getting the Wing Bowl preview. And if you're outside of Philly and you don't know what Wing Bowl is, Google it, because it has turned into a complete phenom. And I'm sure now at 8:06 p.m. Eastern time, I bet you there's probably people already in the parking lot tailgating for 6 a.m. tomorrow. That's how crazy that thing has gotten.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it last year on TV out here, so it's pretty popular.
Yeah, you know, in the early years, like, it was like people would eat, like, you know, in 30 minutes, like, I guess, like, 60, 70 wings or something. Now they're, like, up to eating, like, 300 wings in 30 minutes. It's, like, outrageous. I don't know how they do it. Like, it's amazing. So we got Big Daddy coming up. And then at the end of the show, in the last hour of the show, we're going to be dipping back into some wrestling. We haven't had a wrestling guest on in a while. Former WWE star, now also with Extreme Rising, our good friends at Extreme Rising. We got Rich the Beast Ortiz calling in. So we'll be talking to Rich about his career. He's actually a pro football player, too. He played NFL and Arena Football League, Canadian Football League, and he also played in the short-lived XFL, Vince McMahon's league. So that's going to be interesting to talk to about. So we got a packed show for you tonight, everybody.
Yeah, man. Hey, let me ask you a question. Have you ever thought about doing one of those, like a wing-eating contest or, you know, hot dogs or anything like that?
I'll tell you what. Yes, and with the wings, after seeing them people and how much they eat, I quickly got that notion out of my head because I just can't do it. I really can't. As much as I love to eat wings, like the other day I went for lunch and I had 20 wings and I was full. And, you know, it probably took me like a half hour to eat the 20 wings. So to attempt to eat like 200 of them, no, it's not happening.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think I'd give it a run for its money. I think that I don't like to savor it while it's, you know, going down. And when I was like 12, I won $100 eating a watermelon eating contest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was pretty cool. I don't know. Wing Bowl has always kind of intrigued me a little bit.
I'll tell you what, like, you know, a few years ago they had that show Man vs. Food. And
Yeah. That
became like an obsession with me. Like I would sit, that was literally the true definition of food porn. Like I would sit and watch that show every week religiously and stare at my screen with my mouth open like, okay, I am now hungry and I want to eat. And I started like searching out local places in the area that did food challenges, and I would go
right.
And attempt these whacked out food challenges. And I would go, and I end up getting, like, so sick and so full. And finally, after, like, a few months of doing this, I was like, what am I doing to myself? I finally stopped. I did one, and I completed it. I think it was probably the only challenge I really completed. but I didn't do it in enough time. I had to do it in like 12 minutes, and I did it in 15. And I ate 12 bacon cheeseburgers stacked on top of each other.
Oh, wow.
I did it, but I didn't do it in time, so.
Jeez. Now, see, I've always wanted to do something like that because, like, I've done the Bill Johnson's Big Apple one where it's like you have to eat the steak the size of the plate and you get a T-shirt that says, you know, I ate the big one.
Right,
and, you know, I've got my picture on the wall of some burger joints, but nothing that big, man. That's just a massive amount of meat and grease.
I'll tell you what, it was damn good, too. No, exactly. Like, as afterwards I got done and I'm just sitting there, like, I couldn't stand to even, like, look or smell any food. And afterwards I'm walking to the car and I was just like, I just want to go home. You know, I just wanted to go home and curl into the fetal position. So, it's rough. I don't know how he did it. But
I don't know how whoever cleans your toilet did it.
Well, on that note, how about this? Let's take a commercial break, and then we come back on the flip side. We'll be waiting for Tony to call in, and we'll see if he's done any food challenges, because he's got that one at his place, the cheesesteak challenge,
yeah.
That where they did a Man vs. Food episode there, as a matter of fact. So let's take a commercial break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hi, this is Bobby Brown, author of Dirty Rocker Boys, Love and Lust on the Sunset Strip, and also star of X-Wives of Rock. You are listening to Totally Driven Radio.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend or someone special this Halloween? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to teddyscares.com. And be sure to become our friends at facebook.com/teddyscares.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
It's time to feel the chill in the air, not just outside, but inside as well at the Springfield Ice Skating Rink. We offer lessons, ice rentals, parties, and we are also available for fundraisers. We're also open for public skating every Friday and Saturday from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. and Sundays from 2 to 3:30 p.m. That's the Springfield Ice Skating Rink, 400 West Sproul Road in Springfield, PA in Delaware County. Go to SpringfieldIceRink.com for more details.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Trash City Beads, the great bead store with the weird name, selling beads and findings for over 25 years. Visit us online at trashcity.com. Like us on Facebook at Trash City Beads. Unique beads, charms, crystals, and findings from all over the world at wholesale prices. No store, no showroom, we are online only. Visit us at TrashCity.com. Trash City Beads is your online source for the best beads on the planet. Remember the name, Trash City Beads.
Are you looking for unique gifts for any occasion? Check out Crystal Rocks Jewelry and More. At Crystal Rocks, that's Crystal with a K and R-O-X, you'll find we have jewelry for everyone and every occasion. We also have wine charms, bottle toppers, bookmarkers, zipper pulls, and more. One of our specialties is our beautiful Swarovski Crystal Awareness and Sports Jewelry. We have created a line of earrings, bracelets, and keychains for any awareness calls and any major league or college team, such as the Eagles, Flyers, Phillies, and Penn State. Want something customized? Crystal Rocks can do that too. So come check us out at www.crystalrocks.com. That's Crystal with a K and R-O-X. To see more updated items, look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/crystalrocksjewelry. That's K-R-Y-S-T-A-L-R-O-X-J-W-L-R-Y.
This is Adam Kramer from Philly Throttle, Liberty Vintage, Philadelphia, and you're listening to Totally Driven Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Totally Driven Radio, and we're going to welcome our new sponsor on board, Crystal Rocks, which I started laughing during the commercial because did you see the joke I played on John, our voiceover guy, John, who does our commercials for us?
Yeah.
Did you see that joke I played on this morning, Nick?
Yeah, no, it was hilarious.
It was funny because John had to record that commercial a couple times, and we were waiting to get the approval from Crystal Rocks that they liked the last one we sent them over, and I got the approval. So I was like, all right, I'm going to play a little joke on John. So I sent him a message in our group chat that we have with the whole staff, and I'm like, dude, you got to do it again. I'm like, you spelled it wrong. I'm like, you were stuttering and spelled it wrong. And he's like, I'm listening to it now. I spelled it right. I'm following along with the script. I spelled it right. I swear. I didn't stutter. He's like, I'll give you back money. He's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, no, dude, it's cool. I'm kidding. It was all approved. So welcome aboard to Crystal Rocks, who are now totally driven with us. So,
is it time?
It's time. It is time. Here we go. Well, let's welcome to Totally Driven Radio, Philly's favorite son, a huge inspiration to me, the one, the only, Mr. Tony Luke Jr. Tony, how you doing?
Hey, guys. How are you? I'm good.
Good.
Oh, awesome.
I'm freaking psyched for this. I've been waiting since we started this show. As I said earlier in the show, I said, you were like on my top five list of people who I wanted to interview.
Oh, well, thank you. That's awesome.
And one of the big things is, and I used to contact you a lot about this, you were a big guy, like myself. And
yeah, I was hitting close to 400.
Yeah, and you made a change in your life. And it wasn't a diet, it was a life change. And you just totally took control of your life and just, you did it. And you're still doing it. And that's friggin' awesome. Like, you inspired me to do it, and I was doing it, and I did it for like 10 months, and then I lost complete control.
Well, you know, you can't beat yourself up about that. I mean, I fell a lot. I think the secret to that is not to beat yourself up, to just get back on the horse and just do it again. I mean, it's not a race. I mean, it literally is a journey, you know, to keep the weight off and lose the weight, and I think the problem most people make when they're dieting or exercising or just putting together a plan, the first thing I think that they do wrong is they look at the big number. You know, now if I had looked at the number and knew that I had to lose close to 170 pounds, it just becomes a monumental number, you know, and it's like I can't hit it. So what I used to do is literally say, this week I'm going to lose 3 pounds, and I might lose 5, 6 pounds, 8 pounds.
Right.
And the next week, you know, I'm going to lose another 3 pounds. And I would set these very small goals, and just every week, try to hit those goals every week. Now, if I had fallen and, you know, I just had a moment of weakness and I pigged out that day, I didn't beat myself up the next day. I said, you know what, tomorrow's another day. I'm going to go back tomorrow, and I'm going to do it. And then you get stronger and stronger, and pretty soon those 5 pounds, 6 pounds, 7 pounds a week start adding up, adding up, adding up, adding up. I mean, I didn't notice a change, literally didn't notice any real physical change in me for 9 months.
Wow.
Wow.
Now, the one thing I noticed, too, like, do you still feel this? Like, In the nine, 10 months I was doing it, I dropped 65 pounds. But I would still look in the mirror each day as I was getting dressed, and I still saw myself that 65 pounds heavier. And it was very frustrating mentally to me.
I do it now. I go to stores and I buy clothes, and I look in the mirror and I see the big Tony. I never see me as I am. Now, my kids tease me all the time, because they hate the new Tony. They want the old dad back. You know, they're like, my kids are like, you'll always be fat dad to us. And that's it. They go, you know, so it's, I don't know. I mean, it's what they, you know, what they were used to. You know, when I was thinner, I wasn't heavy. But then as I got older, I just started to put the weight on it. And the bad cycle that we get in is, you know, first it's 10 pounds, and it's 20, then it's 30, then it's 40, then it's 50, and it just keeps going up and up and up and up. And like I said, it just be, you look at it and you go, I can't. It's too long of a journey. I'm not going to spend 2 years dieting. But if you look at it like that, you won't make it. You literally just have to go week to week, week to week. And I'm telling you, you know, it'll happen. I remember I would say to myself, if, you know, if I can just get under 300, under 300, I'll be happy. If I can get under 300 pounds, then I got under 300 pounds, and it was like the greatest day. When I got on the scale and it read 299, I was like, oh, my God, I'm under 300 pounds. Now, if I can just get down to 250, I will be the happy. And I remember the day getting down, you know, to 249, and I was, like, freaking out. And I'm like, if I can just get down to 240, then 230, then to, you know, and now I plateaued. Like, I always stay – it seems I always bounce between 225 and 235 is where I'm always kind of at now.
Now, did you, like, have a goal set, like a big picture goal set, or you just
no,
said,
that's
I'm
what
just
I'm saying. No,
and...
I just small goals, 3 pounds, five pounds. Because if you set a small goal of like 2 pounds and you do five, you're bouncing off the ceilings. It's when you set those unrealistic goals for yourself, you get disappointed, and you look in the mirror and you go, you know what? Forget it. I can't do it. I'm done.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt.
But I have to tell you, I did have a huge help in the beginning. My son's girlfriend, her name is Eleni, and she's such a daughter to me, and she's a physical fitness expert and a trainer, but she's really amazing. She doesn't train you. Her philosophy is a little bit different. She trains you to enjoy working out so that you don't need her. Like her goal is for you to say to her, I don't need you anymore. Like that's her goal. And I hit a plateau where I remember looking at her and I said, I'm done. That's it. I'm heavy. I did this to myself. I can't do it. It was a nice try. Thank you for the 30 days. I'm done. And she called me up, and she said to me, I will not let you fail. She said, I will be in front of your door every day at 7 a.m., and I will wait as long as it takes for you to come out and join me back in the gym again. And for some reason, someone saying that to me, you know, it made me break down and go, well, if she believes in me, why don't I believe that I can do it? And I remember that was the turning point for me, and then that was it. I never looked back.
Wow. That's awesome. So – how, like, do you work out almost every day, or?
No, I don't work out every day. I work out every other day. And what I do is I despise cardio. I hate it with a passion. You know, I used to box when I was a kid, and all I did was cardio, and I never liked it then, and I don't like it now. I like lifting, but what I realize is I can get the same benefit. Well, let me rephrase. I don't want 90,000 people calling your, you know, your face and going, he's wrong. I can get a great benefit by doing not so heavy weights, more reps with only a 30-second break in between, It races my heart like cardio. I'm not saying it's better than cardio. I'm saying for me, it was the perfect marriage. So it's I wait a lot less, 30 seconds in between sets. I do anywhere between 15 to 20 reps per set. And, I, you know, there's a short period. And believe me, by the time I'm done the set, fourth set and I move on to the next, and you really feel like you ran a marathon. Your heart is, like, coming out of your chest because you're doing it, but you're doing it with weights. It's boring. Going on a treadmill to me is the most boring, horrific thing in the world. I want to kill myself every time I'm on a treadmill. I don't know how people do it. I cannot do it. I will not do it. And by doing the weights that way, I get a really good cardio workout, and I'm still lifting, building muscle, and burning fat, and I'm not bored.
Huh. That's interesting. Now, what was, like, your guilty pleasure food that you just...
Oh, I have one food. It's the greatest food that was ever created. It is my absolute kryptonite. I have to run, to this day, run out of the room, or I will eat every single thing on the table. Pizza is the greatest food ever invented. It is my absolute kryptonite. It is my favorite all-time bar none food is pizza.
Who is your favorite pizza in Philly?
It varies. Every pizza is different for me. Like, there's some pizzas I like differently. For a regular pizza, two of my favorites are Franco and Luigi's on 13th and Tasker.
Uh-huh.
And... Jesus, I see when you get old. City Pizza on Front and Snyder. But for a, like, a coal oven style pizza, thin New York style pizza, it's a place that you got to go. It's called Gennaro's, and it's on Jackson Street between Broad and 15th.
Huh.
It's fantastic. It's one of my absolute favorite pizza places in Philly.
I'm making notes here. Which, one of my questions was, you know, being Tony Luke Jr., the man behind the roast pork and all these incredible sandwiches, and did you ever think of going into pizza?
No, because I'd be 14,000 pounds in a year. I'm telling you, I'm not kidding you. That is the one reason I am not. I don't own any pizzerias. I don't have a pizzeria type restaurant. I cannot do it. I'm telling you, it's my biggest weakness. It's the one food I cannot turn away from. So I cut it out of my life. Like, I will literally not eat pizza for 3 months, work out like a lunatic, and then get to my ideal weight, which is like 225. And then I will literally for 1 week eat one whole pie every single day for 7 days.
You know, it's funny, too, because I'm like that, too, with pizza. I worked in the pizza business for like 16 years. I owned my own shop when I was 18. And I could eat pizza 7 days a week, and it wouldn't bother me. For the rest of my life, I could just eat pizza every day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's everything, and it's white flour, which is horrible for you. I'm going to be the first to admit it. White flour is horrible for you, and I don't care.
Here's something funny for you. Actually, I've met you a few times. My cousin right now is calling me, and you grew up with my cousin, Chester Tamburo.
Chester Tamburo?
Anthony Tamburo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's too funny.
Oh, my God. You're going way back. My memory anymore, it's just, I meet people. I'm like, you know, hey, we went to school together. I'm like, you did? They're like, yeah. And I'm like, it takes me like 5 minutes, and I go, you know what? If I'm this bad at my age, 10 years from now, I probably remember where I live if my memory continues to get any worse. Bad.
So, I mean, you're somebody who you have a lot of different avenues that you follow in life. If it's not the food, it's music or movies, TV. Which one of these passions was your true passion that you followed first?
Music. And it's still my number one.
Wow. So you just start young with music, or?
It's a really crazy story. I was probably, I was 14. I think it was near my end of my freshman year, I think, in Newman, and I was thrown out for fighting. And I was out of school. Like, that was it. I went to work, rode in truck. And I remember I did that for almost a year and was ready to start. I would have started, you know, my second year of high school, but I wasn't going back. And I was still too young to not go back to school. And I remember my father telling me he read something in a paper about this new school, you know, for actors and singers and dancers called CAPA, Creative and Performing Arts. And they were holding auditions, you know, for kids to come in. It was the very first year that they were going to open. And I went to the audition, and I got in. They selected, you know, a very small amount of kids. I couldn't believe I got in, but I got in. And it changed my whole life. You know, I'd grown up in South Philly. You know, my whole life, my whole world was a 10-by-10 block radius. And then I go to this school from kids all over, and they're all sharing, and, you know, music and acting, you know. And it changed me. I mean, it really did. It, like, you know, made me look and go, wow, there's a lot outside that I don't know about. There's so much going on. And that's when I really started to get into the music and into the acting hit me. And in the early 80s, you know, I had got spec deals with A&M Records, and I had written for a lot of different people, and I wrote for Brandy Wells, and I wrote for Billy Paul, and, you know, and music was what I loved more than anything. Like, even now, it's every chance I get. I mean, one of the greatest thrills that I've had in the last decade was touring with Daryl Hall and Alan Stone and Sharon Jones. And, you know, we played Broadway and all, and it was unbelievable, you know, to get out there and sing. And then to sing on the same stage with Daryl Hall, who's singing background for me on my tune. And, you know, it was insane. It was so surreal that it was a dream come true for me. It was crazy.
Wow. So then how about with the acting? I guess you started acting, training while you were in the Kappa school as well.
Yeah, I trained when I went into Kappa, but, you know, and I had gone to L.A. and things didn't really work out. You know, I couldn't shake that South Philly attitude, and I got myself in a lot of trouble in Los Angeles, and, you know, I had to come back to Philly. I wasn't welcome there, and I didn't do anything in acting for quite a while, and then I think it was 1994, Raymond Cruz, had come in to town to shoot a film called Up Close and Personal with Robert Redford and Michelle Pfeiffer. And Jonathan Demme was the director, and he would always come down to Tony Luke's to eat. And I met Raymond, and Raymond said, "Hey, you ever do any acting?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he was like, "You want to, you know, be an extra in this film?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I would love that." And I remember going on set, and that was it. I got bit by the bug again. And then I was like, "Nah, I'm just going to act." And a local guy in Philly, a Philly guy named Sal Mazzotta, gave me my first break in his movie. Like, he had done this movie called The Evil Within, and it was a small independent horror film. And, you know, he gave me a speaking role, and, you know, it really got me into doing it again. And I did a lot of these smaller roles. And then I remember getting my break in, like, getting into it again was a film called Tenth and Wolf, which I did with Giovanni Ribisi and Brian Dennehy and Dennis Hopper. And I played this.
Tommy Lee in that movie, too, from Motley Crue?
Yeah, Tommy Lee was in that movie, too, yeah.
Yeah,
and
I remember him talking about it.
In that movie. Yeah, I had a supporting role, and then when the movie came out, they cut all of my dialogue out, every bit of it, you know, happens, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like I was so disappointed that they had done that, because that was like my first big role. But I learned a lot doing that film. And I remember coming off of Tenth and Wolf, and I got a phone call from Diane Heary Casting and my agent, and they said, "Look, we got this role we want you to audition for. It's one line, but it's in a Disney film, and you play a fan you know, in the stadium and you're in the seats and you say something to Greg Kinnear, and I'm like, you know what, I don't want to do that. And they were like, well, why? And I'm like, well, I just came off a movie with Dennis Hopper. I don't want to do one line. I feel like I'm going backwards. I'd rather wait for something better, you know, or at least
right.
try for something better. And she was like, that's a mistake. It's a Disney movie. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to do it. She said, just do it, you know, come in and just read for it. If you don't want to take it, if they give it to you, don't take it. So they send me a thing they call sides. Well, they can't send just one line. So they have to send a page. And in the page was a character named Alice Cooper. And I'm reading this part, and I'm like, that's the role I want. I want that role. So I call them up, and I go, I want to audition for the part of Alice Cooper. And they're like, well, you can't, Tony, because you're bald, you're 5'8", and you're 400 pounds, and this guy is 6'3", skinny as a reel, with long, long hair down to his shoulders. I'm like, I don't care. That's the part I want to audition for. I want to do it. Now, they humor me. I go in, and I audition for this role. They basically said to me, we think you really did a great job, Tony, but you just don't fit, you know, the character. And I said, well, I
right.
appreciate you letting me audition anyway. I get a call back about 3 weeks later. They say to come in, the director of the movie's there. The guy's name was Erickson Kaur. And he said, Tony, I have a problem. I was like, well, what's the problem? He goes, love the audition, but you do not fit the role. He said, so now I have to decide whether I change the role to fit the actor or just get an actor that fits the role. I said, so you called me down here to tell me I didn't get the job. He's like, no, I'm telling you, don't shave your head. Grow your hair as best as you can. And give me 2 weeks to decide. And he called me up 2 weeks later, and he said, you got the role. And that part was of the cape-clad Eagle fan in Invincible trying out for the team. And then when I did that role, it was only supposed to be one scene. But he liked it so much. He liked that character. He got such a kick out of what I was doing with the character that he brought me in the next day, and then he put me on the field. And that's when I, you know, got knocked out by the guy, you know, hitting the bag. And then,
right.
you know, dragging the cape away. And every single scene that he put me in, they did not cut. They used every single one. And that role gave me so much recognition for such a tiny, tiny role that led into me getting the finance to do The Nail, which became a huge cult film. That movie did unbelievably well. It's in every country, in every language, on every pay and cable television network. It did
wow.
tremendous, that film. I could not believe how well that film did. Now, that was the first film that I wore every hat, which I will never, ever, ever, ever do again. You know, because I wrote that film, I sang the title soundtrack for that film, I produced that film, and I did the lead in that film. And that was just way too much, and I didn't enjoy I didn't enjoy doing that film at all. I mean, after when it was done, because it meant so much to me, that's, you know, based, you know, it's loosely based on a true story. So I
right.
really wanted that done. I was just so surprised at the reaction, because in its heyday, that movie on Showtime was the number 6th most watched movie of that year on that cable channel.
That's got to be such an incredible feeling for you. I mean, that's like your baby.
That is my baby, yeah. And I hate, like, I wish I can go back and do it again, because there's a million things in that movie that I can't stand. We were working for no money, you know what I mean? And there were
right.
like scenes that we couldn't use because the lighting was bad, and we had to opt for using a scene that maybe the acting wasn't as good as the other scene we wanted to use, but because the lighting wasn't right, or, you know, or was out of focus, we couldn't use. I mean, it was I would do a million things differently, and we are. Like, I just wrote a script with my son, Michael, called Ride Into Terror, which we're getting the financing for now and hopefully go into production sometime in June. And that's
nice.
A horror film. That's like a biker kind of horror film. But I'm excited about doing that film, too. You know, I definitely want to get back in that arena, back in the movie arena, because I love doing films. Love it.
That's awesome. So, that's even more impressive. I mean, being such a business person and still be able to go after your passions, whether it's the music or the movies or, you know, now you have a TV show coming up now, Frankenfood. on Spike.
Yeah, that was really crazy. I mean, I lucked into that. It was, they were doing a pilot for this movie, for this TV series, Frankenfood, on Spike. And they asked me to come in as a guest judge for one show, just one show. That was it. And I was like, sure. So, I went out to New York City and we filmed the pilot. I said goodbye to everybody. I thanked them for the job and, everybody was okay with it. But what I didn't know was that, Spike had taken that pilot, and what they do before they take a show and put it on the air, they give it to focus groups all around the country, and they let them look at it. Well, the chemistry between me and the host was so good that all of the focus groups were like, no, we like him and we like him. We like him. So everyone kept coming back on, we want Tony, we want the host. We want Tony, we want the host. So I scored so high, the chemistry between me and the host, that they wind up calling me back and going, look, we're going to change the show. Instead of having one host, we're going to have you co-host and judge on the show. Would you want to do it? And I was like, yeah. And, I lucked into that. It was just, I was supposed to just do the one show and be out. And it just worked. I mean, sometimes things just click and you get really lucky. And, it's a big deal for Spike because they've never had any food-type show. So they're really promoting the hell out of it. When this thing, they're going to start promoting sometime in May because the show's going to air in June. And we're doing a lot of cities. Next week we start the first day of filming, and we're in Harlem, we're in Brooklyn, we're in Central Jersey, we're shooting in Philly. So, I was so happy. I'm like, you can't not shoot in Philly. This is, right. I live here. This is Philly. So they definitely decided to do Philly. So they're going to do Philly. We're doing Chicago, North Side, South Side, Madison, Wisconsin, Lockhart, Texas, Austin, and San Antonio. So I start filming next week, and I don't come home. I'm not done filming until the middle of May. So it's going to be a lot of traveling. It's like 3 months of traveling. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, but it sounds like a lot of fun, though. It'll be fun, and again, you're getting to pursue your passions and your dreams.
Yeah, I really did get lucky. I mean, I did. I tell people all the time, I really do feel blessed. But maybe because I'm just, I was never under the impression that I couldn't do something. I was too stupid to know that you can't try to do, four different things, that you need to concentrate on one thing and do that one thing well, and that's it. I was very naive, and I figured, well, wait a minute. I love music. Why can't I do music? Why can't I do acting? Why can't I do restaurant? Why can't I do writing? Why can't I do TV? Because I was very naive. If I didn't know what I know now, I'd be like, you cannot do all those things. But I got lucky. It worked. It just seemed to work. And, I love doing it, So it never feels like work to me. I love opening up new stores. I love meeting new people. I love doing the shows and the events and the tours. And I just have a great time. And I never thought this, I was born and raised at Ethan McClellan, and, my attitude growing up was, you work every day and you just see what happens. And then when I went to Kappa, it was like, nah, I'm not settling for that. I want more than that. I don't want to just do that. I want to, and if I fail, I fail. And I failed 80 gazillion times. I can't even count how many mistakes I made, but I just kept doing it. I was just too dumb to know to stop. I just kept thinking, just get up, do it again, just do it again, do it again, do it again. Eventually it'll happen, just do it again. And that was kind of my philosophy. I just keep knocking on the door until my fingers bleed. And then I knock some more and hoping that somebody will answer it. So.
Now, with your restaurants, did you have this whole plan in your head, like in the back of your head, when you started, to expand to like the, which I don't understand, but the Middle East and you're getting around the country, you're going to be opening later this year in LA, I saw, and
never, because my attitude from a kid was always the same. It was like, if I'm going to do something, then I'm going to do it, or I'm not going to do it at all. And I remember my brother and my father literally looking at me going, you're crazy. And it was like, be happy that you have a store. And I'm like, no. I said, here's the thing. Here was my goal from the beginning. I did not invent the cheesesteak. And every place I've been to in Philadelphia makes a great cheesesteak. And that's the God's honest truth. I'm not just trying to be politically correct. You know, I'm very friendly with Gino. I'm friendly with Frankie Oliveri. I'm friendly with Steve Lee from Steve Princess. I'm friendly with all of the guys that make steak because I never looked at other businesses as competition. We all do the same thing. I learned a long time ago, no one can put you out of business. Only you can put you out of business. And all you can do is the best job that you can do. That's all you can do. You know, and I never felt like anything was competition. I felt there was plenty of room for everyone in the city. And I always tried to do the best. When people come to me and they go, well, do you think you make the best cheesesteak or you make the best roast pork? I go, I make the best sandwich I can make. No one makes the best of anything. Every time I hear someone say, I make the best, I go, you're an idiot. Because you can't say I am the best because everyone's tastes are different. What you like, I may hate. So how can you say, yes, I'm the best? You can't because there's never will 100% of people agree that you make the best of something. There'll always be people that don't like it or like something different. It doesn't mean because I think something is bad that it's bad. It just means that I don't like it, that my taste buds don't like that. That doesn't mean because you like it, you're wrong. You know, so I never say that I'm the best at anything. I say I make the best I can, and you got to hope that the majority of the people feel like you do too. You have to hope that enough people think that you're good so you can make money and you can stay in business. And my goal was, I didn't invent the cheesesteak, but my goal was, and I said this when I opened, in 25 years, that was my goal. I gave myself 25 years. I said in 25 years, anywhere you go in this country and in most places you go in the world, if you say cheesesteaks, I want them to say Tony Luke's. They don't have to say Tony Luke's is the best ever created, but I want them to know Tony Luke's. And I have worked and marketed and branded and tried everything for the last 22 years to make that happen.
And that was one of my questions. I was going to say, what do the other cheesesteak places in the city feel about you? Because you've basically become, when people around the country say cheesesteak, they picture Tony Luke because you've become like the nationwide, you know, figure for the Philly and the cheesesteak.
Well, I don't know if I'm where I want to be yet in recognition, but I will tell you this. I am, and I'm not lying. I mean, you can interview me and Frankie Oliveri are very good friends. Tino Vento are very good friends. Steve Levy are very good friends. I know all the main cheesesteak places, and I try to go to as many other cheesesteak shops and introduce myself and say hi because I enjoy what they do. I mean, I love cheesesteaks. I love roast pork. I wouldn't be in the business. You know, and it's funny, too, when I lost the weight, and I normally never get upset, but I had a gentleman come up to me one day. I was doing an event. And he came up and said, hey, Tony. I said, hey, how are you? He goes, can I ask you a question? I'm like, sure. And he goes, you look really good, and, you know, I've been following what you're doing, and you lost all this weight, and, you know, you're eating right, you're exercising. And I was like, well, thank you. I appreciate it. He goes, so tell me, how does it feel to turn your life around and be in really good shape and then serve food that kills people every day? How does that make you feel? And I went, what did you just say to me? And he said, let me tell you something. I said, you saying because I serve meat or I serve cheesesteaks and roast pork and I'm killing people? I said, you consider yourself a healthy guy? And he said, yeah. I said, you eat salmon? You like salmon? He goes, yeah, I love salmon. I said, how about if I told you that if you ate salmon every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that you would get ill? That is so unhealthy to eat salmon every day, 7 days a week, three times. He said, well, I wouldn't eat salmon every day. I said, when did I tell you to eat cheesesteaks three times a day, four times a day, 7 days a week? Did I ever say that? I said, cheesesteaks don't make you heavy. Roast pork don't make you heavy. Eating five cheesesteaks a day will make you heavy. Eating 15 pieces of salmon a day will make you heavy.
Right.
It's not the food that will make you heavy. It's overeating that will make you heavy. I still eat cheesesteak. I still eat roast pork. I still eat pizza. I eat salmon. I eat whatever I want. I just had to train myself that when I sit down to eat a cheesesteak, I'll eat one cheesesteak, and I may not eat another cheesesteak for 4 or 5 days later, you know, or I'll eat a roast pork. Or if I want to eat a roast pork today and a cheesesteak tomorrow, I'll eat maybe half. I'll save the other half for later for dinner, and I'll spread that to – I mean, because I have to lose the weight. I don't have a metabolism that works, you know, burns off 10,000 calories a day. I have
right.
a normal or a little slower metabolism, so I can't eat as much food as other people that have a high metabolism can eat. But that's okay. That's the cards I was dealt. But I'm
right.
not going to tell people don't eat cheesesteaks, don't eat salmon. I don't think any food is really unhealthy unless you, you know, we know that butter now is not bad for you. Olive oil, fats are good for you, but not if you eat 2 pounds of butter in one sitting. You know what
right.
I mean? I mean, this is just common sense. You know what I mean?
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and I wanted to address that, too, because still never forgot what that guy said to me. It really annoyed me because he was just so ignorant on things that it just completely blew me away. So I believe that there is room for everything. I believe people should sell cheesesteaks and pizzas and tacos, and I also believe they should be selling brown rice. I believe everything is a choice. I believe we need to make good choices. But above all, we need to not consume as much food in one sitting as we tend to do if our metabolisms are not flying. You know what
right.
I mean? You can still enjoy
yep.
all of your favorite foods anytime you want them. And exercise has to be not something you think about doing. It has to be something that you do, like a job. You have to do it. There's no way around.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. Now, how did this whole Middle East thing come to be? Because that just boggles my mind. How did you end up in the Middle East? Well, it's not one, but it's two locations, right?
Yeah, we have two locations in Bahrain, and we're working on the other one in the Dubai Mall now. Well, I didn't want to chase the same dollar everybody else is chasing. I mean, you know, it's basically common sense. I mean, if there's no cheesesteak shops in Iowa, I mean, there is, but I'm saying if there was no cheesesteak shops in Iowa, why do I want to open up another cheesesteak shop in Philadelphia where there's 5,000 cheesesteak shops? You know,
right.
I want to go to Iowa where there's only me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then, you know, there's not as much competition. People are drawn to it because it's something new. And see, people get things mixed. They think that in the Middle Eastern countries, the Arabs don't eat meat. Sure, they eat meat. They don't eat pork. They eat beef. They eat a ton of beef, a ton of chicken. They just don't eat pork. I don't sell roast pork in the Middle East, but I sell beef. And the idea of slicing beef thin and putting it on a roll and adding cheese, you know, they were like, oh, my God, what is this? Like, we've never had this before, you know? And I have to tell you, It was an amazing experience the first time I went there. You know, I thought one thing. I was completely wrong. You know, the people in Bahrain opened their arms to me. They were amazing, you know, and it's like anything else. You know, your people are not your politics. Your politics are your politics. I'm not a congressman. I'm not a senator. I don't make laws. I'm a citizen. I work here. You know, I raise my family here. I don't get involved in politics, and they don't either. You know, what was amazing was like people are the same everywhere. They want to fall in love. They want to have children. They want a nice house. They want to have fun. That's what they want. Everybody wants the same thing. I don't care where you go. We all want the same thing. And I was just treated so amazingly well. And it blew me away how many people knew who I was in the Middle East because they're all watching the Food Network now. They all have Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and they're so westernized. It's amazing. You know, I remember getting there, and all these people showed up, and I'm like, how do these people know who I am? I'm in Bahrain. And they were like, oh, Man vs. Food and, you know, Bobby Flay. And they're just yelling out all the TV shows that I had done. It was such an amazing experience. And I absolutely loved it there. It was incredible. It was amazing. Amazing.
That's amazing. It really is amazing. It just boggled my mind every time I would see that. I was just like, how the hell did he end up in the Middle East?
All right, baby. Yeah. All I'm saying is there isn't one in Phoenix yet. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
yeah, see
give
that, Mike?
Some time. It will happen. We, you know, we just hit L.A., and we're just cutting the rest of the deal for Las Vegas. You know, so we are hitting the West Coast. Florida's got another two getting ready to open up. We're looking at Chicago now. You know, we also got something going on in Austin, Texas. So it's happening, and it's happening quicker than I had ever imagined.
Wow.
But
now,
I have
how
great people. My COO is a guy named John Moser, and I have to be honest with you. I could not do anything that I'm doing if it wasn't for him and the support of my brother, Nicky, and my father, Tony Sr., you know, my family, my three kids. My son, Tony, runs the Front Street store. My son, Michael, runs the commissary where we make our greens. And my son, Joey, is the vice president of operations for the brand. So, you know, they're all contributing. And you need a strong base. You know, for me to do a TV show or fly here, you can't do that unless you have a strong foundation of people. Now, the funny thing is, all the new stores that open, you know, they're all independently owned. They're not owned by me. They're all licensed. So, you know, people call me up and go, oh, you know, your store in Florida. I'm like, it's not my store. I mean, we oversee it.
Right.
We train them. We keep them under a strict guideline of what they have to do. We're constantly checking up on them in quality control, but it's not my store. I don't own it.
Gotcha. Now, how come also, too, then, with the other stores, I guess it's like a limited menu as well. It's not like your South Philly one.
No, it's not like Front Street because Front Street's got 300 items. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. But that's my store. That's my brother, my father, and I store. So, you know, that's ours. The other ones, like I said, I can't put 300. I have to take the sandwiches that sell the best, the sandwiches that people like the most, and concentrate on them because I can't expect a licensee to deal with 300 sandwiches and do it correctly.
Sure. Now, how about your frozen ones? Was the Prontos for a frozen food? I mean, they're damn freaking good.
I wanted to make sure, and I did say that I tested every frozen type cheesesteak sandwich on the market, and I could say that at all of those other sandwiches, the one that tastes the most like a regular cheesesteak was Pronto. I was always very proud of that. If it's microwaved correctly, you put the roll in the toaster oven, it comes out very, very good. But even with that, I had people call me up and go, hey, dude, I bought your Pronto. It doesn't taste anything like your sandwich from the store. I'm like, did you just compare a frozen microwavable packet to what I make at the store? I'm like, it's not supposed to taste like the store. It's supposed to taste very good, but you can't expect a microwavable product to taste like a fresh product made right off the grill.
Right.
You can't. I mean, that product is made, if it's late at night and the stores are closed, you're yearning for a cheesesteak, boom, there it is. Or you don't live close to a cheesesteak place, there it is. It fills that niche. You know what I'm saying? But, and we're always trying to improve on it.
Wow. You are the man. Like I said, you got it going on in every direction.
Well, I'm trying. I figure if I slow down, I'll freeze. I don't know. I got to keep moving. You know, I always got to keep trying something new because I'm getting old now. I'm not as young as I used to be. Every year ticks away, you know. I got to try to stay young in my head at least.
Well, there you go. You're doing it. You're doing it.
I'm trying.
Now, you're also, I guess, have a deal with Acme in the local area too?
Well, no, now we have, you know, we're in Acme's, we're in some of the ShopRite's, we're in, you know, we're cutting deals now with all the major supermarkets to carry the Pronto, and we're about to come out with a steak, like a steak-em type steak, you know, but it is our steak. It's the same kind of ribeye that we use, and, for people that don't want to microwave it, they want to fry it, like in a regular frying pan. They don't want to use a microwave. We're coming out with that very, very soon.
Wow. There you go. Always something cooking with Tony Luke. Cool. So then we have the TV show Frank and Food will be debuting summertime then on Spike.
June. Mm-hmm.
June. We got more restaurants opening. You're going to be L.A.'s opening, you said?
Yeah, L.A. should be open by the summer.
Nice. And then we have a new frozen steak coming.
We have a new frozen steak coming out, yeah. Working on getting the rest of the financing for the new feature, the new film. So hopefully we'll be into production by this summer with that project.
Cool.
And I'm looking to do a new single. I'm actually, when I get back in April, I'm going to be in a recording studio cutting a new single because I still love doing the music. You know, I love it. I'll never stop doing that.
Yeah, you can't stop. You got to keep going. Keep moving forward. Keep going.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Wow. All right, so everybody, they can also go to your website, TonyLuke.com.
Tony Lukes with an S, TonyLukes.com. And like I said, I do a lot. Like, you follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and, you know, they can find out what's going on if they want. You know, I always post everything, where we're going to do, if we're doing a show, or, you know, if, you know, we're filming at a certain place. And I always like to let people know if they want to come down, hang out, and check everything out.
Awesome. Well, Tony, this has been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much. And let's hook up again, Matt, back when the – yeah, no, thank you. When the show's getting ready to debut, let's have you back on to promote the show.
I would love that. Absolutely. Done deal.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Here he is, man of the hour, Tony Luke Jr. Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care, Nick. Thanks, babe. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. There he is, everybody, Tony Luke. That's freaking awesome. Now I need to get a roast pork.
Yeah, it just went my whole way, but I can't get any of that stuff out. Ooh, I can't even get the Tony Luke pronzos yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can get them if I order them from Amazon, but I, you know what I mean?
Stop. You can order them on Amazon?
You can.
Now you really just blew my mind. That's amazing.
No, listen, I'm telling you, go to Amazon and just type in Tony Luke's cheesesteaks and just Tony Luke's and look them up. You can get the cheesesteaks and you can get the Philly style roast pork sandwich.
Dude, I'll tell you what, dude, seriously, this is no BS. For a frozen, you know, roast pork or cheesesteak, they're really good.
Right.
I couldn't believe how good they were for being, you know, frozen. I mean, they're definitely probably the best, like, frozen quick meal like that I've ever had. I couldn't believe how good they were.
I have one little five out of the telephone screen.
So,
I can't get them.
So, go on to Amazon and order some Tony Luke's. That's amazing. You can order that.
That's what you have to do, man, and I'm telling you, it's actually, like, it's, like, $40 for, like, 8 portions.
Yeah, because, well, in the supermarkets, they're, like, $7 a box, $8 a box, and there's two
in
the box.
I mean, it's not a bad deal.
No, it's not. And look, I'm going to end up going on Amazon and ordering Tony Luke Prontos now. All right, well, on that note, let's take another commercial break. And we'll come back, and we'll do our Danko Jones interview. Then after that, we'll get Big Daddy on the line. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
Hey, guys. This is Bree from MasterChef, now at Hashtag Kitchen. And you are listening to Totally Driven Radio.
Attention sports fans, collectors, hobbyists, and autograph seekers. Are you looking for the best in sports cards and collectibles? The only name you need to know is Carl's. That's right, Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, PA not only has the best collection of sports memorabilia, cards, game, used merchandise, and autograph signings for top professional athletes, he also does custom framing too. Go to carlscards.com or like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Carl's Cards. That's Carl's Cards and Collectibles, 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA. Remember, Carl's, the only and best name in sports cards and collectibles.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways.
But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Are you in the market for a quality used car? Have problems trusting fly-by-night used car dealerships? Check out Ken Nolan's Plymouth Meeting Auto Sales. Ken has been in business for almost 30 years, selling cars not only to people all over the Philadelphia area, but now worldwide thanks to our website at www.plymouthmeetingautosales.com. At Plymouth Meeting Auto Sales, we have cars for all size wallets, inexpensive cars under $3,000, to classic cars and even dump trucks. Stop on in. That's Plymouth Meeting Auto Sales, 1215 Ridge Pike, Conshohocken, PA, or call 610-828-4427.
It's time. Time to get really, really real with the man, the brand, the artist, Philadelphia's own Realism. The first hip-hop artist to release an album exclusively on innovative USB wristbands. The future of music just got real. Visit 4realism.com, that's the number 4, and also look for Realism on Facebook and Twitter. And get really, really real, and then tell them how you feel.
Have you ever wanted to read a Hollywood biography that really goes deeper than just the headlines? A best-selling author has done exactly that. Guests of Totally Driven Radio, author Sarab Dutt has written the best-selling biographies on Oscar-nominated actor Mickey Rourke, teen heartthrob and star of The Lost Boys, Corey Haim, and has been commissioned to write the biography on Batman Forever star Val Kilmer. Check out these books, as well as his novel, The Pugilist's Son, whose proceeds are going to the Muhammad Ali Center. You can find these fine books on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Waterstones, and of course, on iTunes.
Chrissy Biasello, the obnoxious personality from Season 4 of MasterChef, now has her own business called The Rotund Chef. You can hire Chrissy to be a private chef. She also does in-home cooking demonstrations one-on-one for you or for you and your friends. If that wasn't enough, she also does catering as well. You may love her or you may hate her, but you will definitely want to cook like her. The Rotund Chef. Look for The Rotund Chef on Facebook for more details. And don't forget to listen to her new show, Fork Off with Chrissy Biasello, every Monday night on the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
Hi, this is Cherie Curry of The Runaways, and you're listening to Totally Driven Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Totally Driven Radio. And as a matter of fact, it was funny. I just checked the Twitter, and Tony Luke's USA, the company Twitter account, they were tweeting out the links where you can order the prontos. So don't go to Amazon. Go right to them.
Oh, awesome.
So, all right, so here we go. We're going to play the interview from this morning with Danko Jones. So tune in, crank it up, and be ready to hear some fun talk with Danko, and we play his new single as well, Legs. So here we go. All right, everybody, here we are, Totally Driven Radio, and it's time to welcome the man of the hour, all the way from Canada, the one, the only, Mr. Danko Jones. Danko, hello. Welcome to Totally Driven Radio.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, real quick before I get into the whole interview thing, I want to tell you a quick story that I have of you and my first real experience of experiencing Danko Jones and the rest of the band.
Okay.
You guys played in Philly. I'm here down here in Philly. You guys played Philly a thing called Babe Fest that Gene Simmons was hosting.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I guess it was right around the time when Lover Call had broke.
And
so I was like, all right, I knew the song. I was like, all right, yeah, me and my buddy was like, yeah, good song. We're like, cool, Danko's playing. This is going to be a good show. And you're like, you're in the, I'm in the crowd. I'm like, yeah, this is good. And then I don't know what song it was, but you just literally started beating yourself in the face during the song.
Oh, okay, yeah, that was the that had to be the last song.
I mean,
on the mountain,
full on punching yourself in the face, where I'm actually watching your face swell up from hitting yourself.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore. I got a detached retina, and I had to be hospitalized, and I had an eye operation for it.
Really?
So I don't do that anymore. Yeah, that's why I wear glasses now, because I'm short-sighted in one eye and far-sighted in the other because of the operation.
Wow.
So that's actually what happens when you punch yourself in the face repeatedly every night on a 30-date tour for 7 years.
But and after seeing that, I was just like, this dude is serious. And one of the things that I always look for in music, and any types of music, I mean, my heart and soul's hard rock and metal and all, but the one thing I always look for is emotion and passion in music, and that right there sold me. I was like, this dude is the shit. I mean, this was awesome.
It's also obvious also that you look for stupidity, because that was the dumbest thing I ever used to do. It was dumb. I mean, it was a good way to, like, take out aggression, and even from a performance point of view, it was a great way to grab people's attention, especially when, you know, we were in an opening situation and we weren't really winning them over. That was the decider, actually, at the end of the show. But in hindsight, you know, like, just the stuff I had to go through, like, with my eye and stuff, I sometimes go, I don't know if it was worth it, just because I didn't have a good time going through that whole eye thing.
Whatever.
I mean, it's in the past, and I wear glasses now, so, you know, whatever. I guess I can wear it as like a badge of what I've gone through, I guess. But yeah,
funny.
I'm glad you remembered it. So I guess it worked that night.
Oh, absolutely.
It worked that
absolutely.
Night. Yeah.
You know, that's my Danko Jones experience I'll never forget.
Yeah, I mean, I used to do stupid stuff like that. I remember that was in 05 when we played that Babe Fest with Gene Simmons.
Okay.
And that same year, we were in Seattle playing with a band called Turbo Negro. We were opening for them. And there was, you can win over a whole room full of people, but if there's one person who's not won over, your whole attention focuses to that person.
Right.
It's just how I am, and a lot of people are like that too. So there was one guy who just kept heckling me through the whole set, and as we were leaving, the dressing room was near where he was standing, and I just looked at him, and I punched myself in the forehead so hard that for the rest of the night, and luckily we had to fly home the next day, for the rest of the night into the morning, all the way to the airport, I thought I gave myself a grade 3 concussion when I looked online, and I went to my family doctor, and then when he asked me what was wrong, I had to tell him, like, look, this might sound crazy, but he goes, how'd you get the concussion? I go, well, this is crazy, but I punched myself in the forehead. But I didn't get a concussion. I thought I had. Never self-diagnosed through the internet.
Yeah. Go right to WebMD and see what the symptoms are.
Yeah.
Now, you guys are from Canada. And
yeah.
The one thing, like, now growing up here in Philly, I had across the alley from me, across the driveway from me, was a neighbor who had relatives in Canada. And twice a year, they would come down and visit. And, I mean, this is going back from, like, the 70s through the 80s and 90s. And back in the 80s, when the whole hard rock explosion was happening, you know, we would start getting into that whole, you know, the metal scene that was blowing up. And he would bring down bands from Canada. And one of them was a band called Sword. And we used to just jam out to them. And I never got to experience him down here until he would bring the tapes down. Does something like that, being a band from Canada, like early on, kind of like make you think like, all right, well, we got to like break out of Canada and we got to come down to the States, or did you just plan to just stick it out? Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, when we first formed, we got a lot of flack from at least the Toronto scene, which bled out into the rest of the country when they found out that we weren't going to play Canada. That was our whole initial platform. We wanted to just concentrate on the States, because at the time, during like the 90s garage rock scene, there were a handful of Canadian, great Canadian garage bands. I'm actually wearing a Mance shirt right now from Calgary, and now they're from Victoria. I'm wearing it as I speak to you.
Nice.
But compared to America, I mean, America, just that's where the scene was, and that's all the bands that we loved that we kind of built our band on were from America, and that's who we wanted to play with. So we just said, well, what's the point of playing in Canada when there's no garage rock scene? Nobody here gets it, and the people who do are in so few numbers that it won't support us as a band. We can't really tour. So
right.
We were very vocal about it, and I think that pissed off a lot of people around here. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, the emphasis was always on at least getting away from touring Canada. And having said that, you know, after all these years, 2014 is actually the first year, finally, where we've made a concerted effort to just tour home. We're touring Canada.
Wow.
This year. Yeah, we're playing Canada and staying home and working on a record. And we've never really done that where it's only really just Canada. There might be a few European shows, but other than that, it's really going to be just Canada this year.
So does that mean the scene in Canada is getting a lot better, the rock scene?
We're going to find out.
Yeah, you know, and that's a question I've been asking, like, the past few weeks, a lot of the guests I've had. And a big thing for myself, especially, like, here in Philly, like, it seems like the rock scene is dead. And it's weird, and I explain this to people, like, and it's been like this in Philly for a while. Like, you know, we're sandwiched between, like, you know, Maryland and North Jersey, New York area. And it's like those two towns do really well. And it seems a lot of bands skip over Philly, and it like boggles my mind that a major market like Philly gets skipped over by so many bands. And I just wonder, like, in general, and especially, like, even looking outside in a worldwide picture, like, over in Europe and all, the scene seems like the rock scene's a lot better than it is down here in the States. And I just wonder what happened. Like, what's going on?
I think you're asking questions that a lot of people are asking. I really don't have the answer, because there's all the really, what I feel, are really great rock bands are embraced in Europe. And that's where, that's where we find each other abroad in Europe, to the point where we come home, we tour North America, Canada, America, and we measure it up against what we just experienced in Europe and in other continents, other places, and it just doesn't measure up. And you just kind of go, well, what's the point of touring here when we're actually losing money? I mean, if we do this long enough, we won't be able to make rent, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't know. I look at some of the bands that are under the umbrella of quote-unquote rock. I don't find them containing a lot of rock in their songs and their albums. I don't want to really kind of point them out, but I think we all have our different lists, and some of them have the same bands on them. But I find that is whoever is in charge. I don't know if there's some sort of pyramid, but whoever's at the top deciding on what bands get focused on has a really bad skewed view of what rock is and what rock's supposed to sound like. Because to me, there's enough bands around today that really fill that void. It's not as if we are in we have a situation where, yeah, where are all the bands? Well, the bands are here. They're just not getting the support in the audience the way I feel some really, really bad representatives of rock are, you know? I can name you 10 bands off the tip of my tongue right now that are incredible. You know, there's Graveyard, Free Fall, Horizont, a lot of them from Scandinavia, actually. Those three are. There's Volbeat. Supergroup, Broken Teeth. This is just off the top of my head. I'd have to scroll through my iPod to give you more. But I mean, there's really a lot of real great rock bands out there, and there would be Airborne's another one. There would be more if they just had the support. You know, I think a lot of people would start picking up guitars and playing some rock. Imperial State with Nicky Anderson's new band. Dragon from the Backyard Babies has a new great rock record out. Turbo Negro guys just put out an album last year that was pretty amazing. Yeah, and on it goes, you know. But, you know, where are the droves of people who support these bands enough for them to, like, tour and keep putting out records and keep existing? I don't know. You know, what the problem might be is that rock and roll is past the middle age, is past middle age. You know, it's older than rap. Rap is middle age now. And rock is way older than rap. And what we have is a situation where a band that forms, well, they're not really up against their contemporaries so much as they're up against the entire Zeppelin catalog. And that is a very hard entity to go up against, you know. So you have an audience that's going, well, you know, I really like this first album you put out. It's very rudimentary, and I can see potential. But you know what? All I have to do is put on Houses of the Holy, and I'm going to get my ass kicked. Or all I need to put on is Masters of Reality, and I'm going to get my ass kicked. And this band, this young band that's got a lot of potential – has to go up against Sabotage or, you know, that is the problem, the predicament that a lot of bands who play rock are up against, I think. You know, you got to go up against Appetite for Destruction. Now, how the fuck are you going to go up against, sorry for swearing, but how are you going to go up against Appetite for Destruction? You know, your first shot at being a band, you know, you're up against these kinds of albums because rock is just that old, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say
that. And
it's
not a situation like jazz, where jazz is the same way in a sense. Like, you know, jazz kind of died because, well, how are you going to beat John Coltrane?
Right.
How are you going to beat a Love Supreme? What are you going to do with your horn that Coltrane didn't already do, you know? So...
Yeah, you know, we had Randy Rhoads' brother on last week, and he's been putting out, like, classical piano albums, and he kind of said the same thing. He's like, how the hell am I going to make money making classical music? He's like, how am I supposed to top the greats of classical music? You know what I mean? And, it's kind of that same thing with that. It's...
Classical music is in a weird situation, too, because that's, like, the ultimate cover band music. It's just made up of cover bands.
Right.
It's a genre of music. A contemporary genre of music is made up of cover bands. That's like saying, like, yeah, I really liked Appetite for Destruction's album where they covered Appetite for Destruction. I mean, it's just
right.
It's a ridiculous genre at this point.
That's crazy. Now, you guys have
but
played
I will
with,
say,
like...
I will say, classical music. I mean, when you get into, like, avant-garde composers in the classical music genre, that's a kind of music that I'm really interested in, but I'm trying to find my – I feel like I'm 13 again, trying to figure out which punk rock record I should buy. You know, so that's a real interesting – on the other hand, that's the other side of the genre, which is really exciting to me. Sorry.
Yeah, No, that's all right. It's one thing myself, like, I never really got into was the whole classical thing. And I think it's been more of, like, an intimidating factor because of how good it is.
Yeah.
But you guys have toured and played with some, you know, the iconic bands of all time. You know, your Guns N' Roses, the Stones, Motorhead. Is there anybody out there that you'd really like to play with yet that you haven't?
Oh, yeah, AC/DC and Kiss. But really, Kiss, I mean, I would freak if we ever did.
Yeah, Kiss seems to be, like, your band, the biggest influence for you.
I don't know. They're my favorite band, like Kiss and Metallica, just because I got into them when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I listen to Kiss songs and even Metallica songs, it just sounds like Happy Birthday to me. Like, I've heard it so much that it doesn't have that impact it used to. Sometimes
right.
when I'll, like, I mean, I saw them, like, 10 years ago on, I guess it was right before they put, like, around St. Anger. And they started with Fight Fire with Fire. They started the show with that. And I felt like my heart start, like, racing because it was just so amazing. But,
right.
you know, they're just so embedded into my psyche and my ears are become so accustomed to them that I don't even hear them almost, you know?
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen Metallica play live since Cliff died. Last time I saw them on the Ride the Lightning tour and Master of Puppets tour is the last time I seen them.
Well, then I don't really think you should. Because it's never going to – it's just never going to come close to – because I collect bootlegs, but I only collect stuff I can find with Cliff on them,
nice.
Like DVD bootlegs. So there's a few that are kind of like I'll never find. You know, there's a few that are just – I don't know. I will eternally be searching for. But – when you put it up against what they are today, and it's not disrespecting them at all, because
yeah.
how can they compete against, you know, like Ride the Lightning era? They're
right.
in their 50s now. I mean,
yeah.
God, they're doing better than most 50-year-old bands, you know. But still, I mean, it's just like, well, you know, Cliff is the all-encompassing shadow that they will forever live under.
Now, how about, I mean, you guys are only a three-piece, and I, being with bands like Metallica and Kiss with a double guitar, did you ever guys ever have or think about adding an extra guitar player?
You know, we did initially, like, I would say, like, maybe 15 years ago, but we are doing fine, you know. It's not broke, you know. It allows for the music to be a little raw as well.
Right.
So, in that sense, no, not really.
Now, going back to touring.
Yeah.
You guys do a lot of festival tours, I guess, like Uproar Festival and stuff like that, and you know, you guys
we
do
have,
smaller
yeah.
stuff. What,
yeah,
what
we
do you
have.
Prefer doing? Like,
I really like that Uproar Festival. It was fun to hang out with all the bands that were there, especially Walking Papers and Dead Daisies, because we knew people there, and even like some people in the Coheed camp we knew, so it was fun to hang out with those people.
Right.
And it was a kind of a relaxed thing because we weren't headlining, so the pressure wasn't on us to deliver at the end of the night and you know, give everybody the money shot home.
Right.
So, you know, we just did our set, and then we had the rest of the day to just chill and hang. And even, like, leading up to our set, it was pretty relaxed because, you know, nobody really was there to see us particularly. I like that kind of up that festival touring. In terms of, like, the European tours where you fly to the one day of the festival, those are great,
right.
too, because once again you get to hang out with some bands, and sometimes they're your friends, sometimes you're fans of them. And
gotcha.
Then sometimes – on occasion, you find out they like your band, too, so that's kind of nice. That's great. When you're doing your own tour, everybody's there to see you. It's a lot of pressure, but, you know, the payback is like tenfold just because it's just that much more intense, you know.
Now, do you like touring around the country in a van?
No. I've done my share of it. I mean, we're not above doing it. We'll do it if we have to.
Right.
If the tour's right, we'll do it. But I've had this discussion with people, and some guys who've done both, like bus tours and van tours, prefer vans.
Really?
But I prefer buses.
Yeah.
In the end, it's almost equal. It works out equally depending on what level of touring you are. If you're crashing on people's house, people's floors, and you're touring in a van, well then, you know, you're gonna probably save more money. But in the end of the day, if you're getting hotels every night, it pretty much works out the same. And I prefer to tour on a bus.
Cool. Keep it real. Old school way.
Yeah.
Now, you got, like, your hands into everything, it seems like, you know, besides music. You've become somewhat of a writer now where you write a column for the Huffington Post. And, you know, you had your own book as well that you wrote?
No. That was written by Stuart Berman, who writes for Pitchfork, and he writes for – he's the editor of The Grid Weekly here in Toronto. He wrote that book. People think I wrote it. I never wrote it. It's a oral history on our band. So there's like almost, I think there's 74, 75 people interviewed for it. So everybody from, you know, Peaches and Lemmy and David Vincent from Morbid Angel, guys in Death Angel, Sepultura. Yeah, all kinds of people are in it.
Now, a lot of those bands you're naming, I mean, they're like old school thrash bands, and you guys are not a thrash band. So how's that feel to be like?
There's a lot of rock bands in there, too. There's, I think Eddie Spaghetti's in there, Blaine Cartwright from Nashville Pussy's in there. I mean, there's 75 people. There's a Jello Biafra's there. A guy from the Raconteurs is there. So, I mean, it's just all kinds of people.
Cool. So, okay, so you're Huffington Post column that you do that's weekly. How'd that all come about?
I've been writing for music magazines since 2005.
Oh, wow.
I started writing for Rock Hard magazine in Germany in 2005 after I put out my spoken word album. The editor for Rock Hard, Gotts Hunnament, he gave me the column. So I wrote for them for about 2 years, and then I started writing for a Norwegian magazine called Mute Magazine, a Hungarian magazine called Broken Guitars. I wrote for Rockstar Magazine in Switzerland. I write currently for Rock Zone in Spain. I have been for the past 3 years, 4 years, and I've had a column, a monthly column in Close Up Magazine, which is Sweden's premier metal magazine, for the past 8 years.
Nice.
Huffington is a column I got last September of 2012, and they wanted me to write maybe like once a month or as many times as I wanted, thinking I was just going to write like maybe once a month or once every other month. But I told them I'll write like 2-3 times a week, and they said, well, that's too much. So I said, okay, I'll write weekly. I did that for a year, and then I just took it to a biweekly column now. So I do it every other week. I have a podcast I do that's kind of taking up a lot of my time. So, and plus we're getting into pre-production mode, which is actually where I have to go to in 5 minutes. I got to go to rehearsal.
Okay.
But yeah, we're ramping up for the new album, and my time is getting limited. I do have columns. Like, I do really enjoy writing for Huffington, because they just pretty much let me write whatever I want. I'm not like writing some insane stuff, so they don't really have to worry about me too much. So, you know, I'm just kind of on autopilot there. So.
Cool. Now, your podcast, is it weekly or?
That changes just because, I mean, I only have to report to myself. So I do it whenever I want, but I was trying to do it every 10 days up until last month when the holidays came, and I just said, you know what, I'm taking a break. So my version of a break is every 2 weeks. So we uploaded the newest episode this past week, which is episode number 68 with Derek Beckles. Derek Beckles is the creator of Hot Package, which is a show on Adult Swim. He also writes for Eric and Andre, and he writes for – I think he writes for Tim and Eric. I think he works with Tim Heidecker as well. But he wrote for Vice for the longest time. He had a show called – well, he has a show called TV Carnage, if you've heard about it. But Hot Package is just a genius show on Adult Swim. It's got Pat O'Brien. And that dude from, God, what's its name? Windy City Heat. The star of Windy City Heat is also on Hot Package. So anyways, that's the latest episode. The one before that was with Bruce Pavitt, the co-founder of Sub Pop Records.
Okay.
I talked to Bruce. And then what's coming up is Damien Abraham, the singer of Effed Up, a comedian from Canada who I'm a big fan of, Sean Cullen. Ian Christie, the owner of Bazillion Points, that book publishing company that put out what's that Bay Area thrash photo book? I have it here. Hold on. He put out Only Death Is Real, the Celtic Frost book, Murder in the Front Row.
Okay.
By Harold Oyman. Yeah, he put out that book. He put out Only Death Is Real, the Celtic Frost book, and he put out the Swedish death metal book. So I interviewed him, and we talked about Bazillion Points. That's coming up soon, too.
Cool. Well, the last thing I want to touch on before I let you go so you can get the rehearsal is the video for Legs.
Yep.
Well, two things. It looked like you had a lot of fun doing it. And one thing you guys always do is videos, which is awesome. I mean, it's like you guys keep that video spirit alive, and I truly still believe the video is such an important factor in music, and it surprises me that a lot of other bands don't continue to do it.
I don't know if they don't continue or they just like have given. They just don't get played. It just goes directly to YouTube now.
Because, right.
And they don't. They don't use social media as much as we're utilizing it. Like, I'm on Twitter all the time. You know,
right.
We're always uploading stuff because of the podcast and because of the Huffington Online articles. So I'm always online and I'm always on Twitter and even Instagram. They put the Instagram bug in me recently, so I'm doing that too. So, I mean, if you can do a video, and there's a lot of bands that have videos, when you search on YouTube, I'm always surprised that, oh, wow, this band has a video? I never knew. Well, I should know, but because they're not as active on social media as maybe other bands are or other bands have hired, you never hear about it. As far as the Legs video is concerned, we did that in October, and it didn't get released until December. But, it's got 14 transsexuals who are tying me up and basically trying to have their way with me. And it was directed by Bruce LaBruce, who is a real well-known filmmaker, at least here in Canada and in Europe, and I'm sure in America he has quite a huge fan base. But he's done some great work, and we've always wanted Bruce to work with Bruce and direct one of our videos, and I think this was the perfect time. So yeah, I mean, as far as I was, to be honest with you, I felt claustrophobic for the entire shoot, and it was a mental fight to like not scream out and just go get me out of here, because I really started feeling claustrophobic. The tape that's around me is real, and she just kept wrapping it every single take to the point where you start to really. It's funny how quick you can go nuts, because I just started going, like, I had to calm myself down because I was really claustrophobic and I could not move. And that freaks me out. And that's when I realized, wow, you're really claustrophobic. And it had nothing to do with, like, you know, people trying to, like, throw themselves at me during the shoot. That was the easy part. The hard part was, like, trying to sit still in this chair knowing that if a fire breaks out, I'm fucked. So those were the thoughts that were like going through my head. I was like, you know, it was cool though, because Bruce was just like, "Are you okay? Are you cool?" Like everybody was like, because the part where I have the blindfold on, that was the worst, because that's when I was like, "Wow, I'm blinded, and I can't move, and if something fucking happens right now, I'm dead."
That really took it to the next level.
Yeah, that was just like, ugh, you know. So it made it hard. And once I was wrapped for the day, I was super relieved. Oh my God. I didn't show it on set, but I was just like, oh my God, I lived through it. I'm still alive. There was no fire or earthquake or you know, so it was cool.
That's awesome. Well, everybody can go to DankoJones.com, and you got all your links up there for your social medias and all that. And
I'm sure there is. Yeah, I mean, it's Twitter.com/DankoJones, Facebook.com/DankoJones. Yeah, and from there you can probably follow the links, iTunes podcast, the official Danko Jones podcast, and just do searches on Huffington Post and my name, and you'll find something.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. And actually, as I let you go, I'm going to play Legs for everybody, if that's cool.
Perfect.
Cool.
It'll bring up crazy memories of claustrophobic memories.
Well, thanks so much, and hope to keep in touch, and I hope you come back down to Philly sometime soon.
Yeah, we totally want to. I mean, Philly's been great to us, and it's a great city. We played there recently with Volbeat last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were there. It was the last show of the tour, too, so that made it more memorable. We were screwing around with them, and they tried to screw with us, and it was pretty funny.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Danko, cool. We'll take care, and be in touch.
All right, see ya.
See ya. All right, everybody,
bye-bye.
Danko Jones, take care.
Bye-bye.
And here we go, the video he was just talking about, the song Legs. bones with legs. And that's off his latest release, Rock and Roll is Black and Blue. You can get that on iTunes. So go there, download it, get the whole album. You'll see his whole catalog on iTunes as well. Go to DankoJones.com for all the links, and you can see the legs video and his links to his podcast and his social media, his YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and his new little craze of Instagram. All right, everybody. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back in a few. All right, everybody, guess what? We're not going to take a commercial break. We're going to be going live. So how about that? I had figured a commercial break earlier. Sounded like a good idea, but we've already taken two. We're going to have to take one more. So we're good for right now. And actually, we got Big Daddy on the line, and I was just in our little secret room talking with him. Big Daddy, you're live on Totally Driven Radio. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. How's everybody doing this evening? Day before Wing Bowl and all that good stuff.
We're doing good, but not as good as you. You just got home from Chicky and Peach, you were telling me.
Yeah, just got home, had a whole bunch of strippers sitting on my lap and feeding me drinks.
Oh, I love that laugh.
There's nothing like free beer and butt. Outside of that, I'm doing good. I can't wait for tomorrow. It's going to be it's always a good time down at the Wing Bowl. All the contestants were there. We actually got a guy, the Eagle Center. He's going to be a contestant this year, so.
John Dornbross or whatever his name is?
No, it's Celtic. Whatever the hell. He's the Eagle.
Okay.
And he's the center, and he's going to be competing this year in the Wing Bowl. And he actually got in. He only ate 5 wings, so I don't see how he qualified. But we'll see how he does. And the guy who won it last year from New England is back again. And Super Squid is back in it again, so Super Squid wants his title back. So it should be pretty good. It should be interesting. Because the guy that won it last year from New England kicked his behind pretty good. So I hope Super Squid comes to play, because this guy really, like, he smashed him. He beat him by at least 100 wings.
No.
So.
How about you? Like, why don't you get involved in this?
I kind of held out, didn't really want to be involved, but I told the people from Cheerleaders tonight that next year I am going to enter. So
now,
you're the first person that actually said it. Big Daddy will be in the Wing Bowl next year as a participant.
Now let me ask you this, because we were talking about this earlier in the show, myself, and actually we have a new co-host, Nick Wilkinson. Frank has departed the show, and he's going to spin off and know his own show starting this week, actually. But
ain't he special?
Ain't that special? So me and Nick were talking, and Nick was saying he'd probably be able to throw down a whole lot of wings. Now, myself, I love buffalo wings, but, like, I could not eat, like, an overabundance of wings like these guys do. Now, can you do that?
Here's the thing. Now, I know you like going to Hooters and eating the wings there. And,
right.
You know, when you order wings and a regular size wing. These wings aren't regular size wings. They're smaller.
Sitters. Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you probably could do a little bit more because they're not as big as the average size wing.
Gotcha.
And
yeah,
the secret is, because I've listened to a couple of people as far as competitive eating, the secret is you got to eat a big meal the night before. And then, you know, when you come in there, your stomach expands and you could take in a lot more.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't like, we're not talking about sitting at Hooters and drinking some beers and eating some wings and having a good time. You have to look at it like eating is your job to do right now, and I'm ready to go to work.
Yeah, that's the attitude you got to take. That's the attitude you have to take with it. But it's just like I said, they're not average size wings, and you probably can put a lot of. How much can you do on average? Can you eat like 20 wings in a sitting?
Dude, when we order wings, I order 250s, and there's always just like a handful of wings left over.
You should be fine, man.
Here's the thing, though. With them wings you're ordering, Nick, like when I order my wings from Hooters, I mean, they got breading on.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot, you know what I mean? There's a lot more to them. So
yeah.
The wings you're getting, is there breading on them?
No, there's no breading on them.
No, no.
Right.
Mine are, you know, more traditional, yeah. No breading.
Okay. As a matter of fact, like, I really like P.J. Wheelahan's wings, too, who are the official wing of Wing Bowl. And I actually went there for lunch the other day, and I had 20 wings. And, I mean, their wings are nice size, so I guess they use different wings. And they put, like, a slight breading on theirs as well. But I guess they don't do that for this.
Yeah, sorry about that, excuse me. I think they bring in smaller ones because I've seen those wings close up. And they're no way the same size you would if you like at the restaurant in order. So I think they do that for a reason. But even with that, like a lot of these guys go maybe 100, like 50 to 100, and they're pretty much ready to tap out. There's only a special eater to actually go past that. So I just want to enter just to do the entourage thing and just to be a part of it instead of just acting like a nut. I want to actually compete and see how well I do. Because a friend of mine actually did do it. Chitlin' Chuck, he did it a couple of years ago, and he was telling me how hard it was. So I want to see if I can at least get past what he did.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you're going to do it next year, I would love to be part of your entourage.
No doubt. You know I got your back.
I have not been to a Wing Bowl yet. I've been asked a few times. As a matter of fact, you asked me when I saw you a couple weeks ago if I wanted to go. And I got another friend of mine had free tickets to go tomorrow, too. And my wife's like, well, do you want to go? And I'm just like, you know what? The main reason I don't want to go is I don't want to get up that early. Because to really fully, it seems like to enjoy it, you got to be there early. And I said to Nick, I bet you there's people already there tailgating now.
Yes. There's people that are going to be there from midnight. There's going to be people going to be there from midnight on. There's already tailgating and drunk. As soon as you come in there, everybody's drunk. Everybody's drunk. It's like, I'm not looking forward to getting up early either. I have to get up like at least 3:30 in the morning to start to get my bag together so I can leave it for it because I got to pick up a friend of mine, my student, Slim Whiskey. I got to pick him up because he's coming with me. So I could be there by like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning because I want to enjoy the whole part of it. I want to be there and see exactly what I'm doing. I want to walk around a little bit. I want to meet some of the media people. So I want to take advantage of the whole situation. So I don't even know if I'm going to sleep tonight, to be honest with you.
You got to get some sleep in.
I don't know because I don't normally go to sleep until like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning anyway. So even if I doze off, I'm going to get maybe 2 hours or whatever. Then I have to go to the after party after the Wing Bowl. You got to go to the after party.
Oh, that's
so
beautiful. And where's the after party? At Cheerleaders?
Yeah, I'm going to be at Cheerleaders for the after party. And I got free passes. Anybody listening, if they want to come, if they see me and ask me, I got a ton of free passes for Cheerleaders tomorrow. I also have 10 free tickets to the Sixers game tomorrow night. So if anybody's listening, I got 10 free tickets to the Sixers game tomorrow.
Look at you.
Sitting right behind me.
Wow. Big daddy.
Yeah, I'm an important guy.
Yes, you are. Yo, who would have thought that? I mean, seriously, take a minute and think about that. Rewind, you know, think about this, too. I mean, this is now 2014.
Yes.
14 years ago when we were business partners promoting wrestling shows, would you picture yourself being the big daddy that you are today?
No. No, I would have never thought that it would have mushroomed into what it did. Even when I was a Broad Street Beefcake, I wouldn't have thought that all this would have happened after I was a Broad Street Beefcake. As soon as they got rid of us, I just thought it was done. I just thought I would get tickets here or there to come to a game here or there. But now since, you know, it took off and flew, you know, I just thank God for the opportunity, you know, because I enjoy going down to games. And how many people can actually say they get season tickets for free?
Yeah, right.
You know, not too many people can say that. I got season tickets, you know, for free. I pretty much go in the building and nobody bothers me. You know what I'm saying? And I knew everybody there.
House.
And I go sit, you know, sit in my seat. And it's funny because people come up to me all the time wanting to take pictures with me. They say they see me on TV all the time. And I'm like, when? You know, you must be really looking at this game really hard to see me in a crowd sitting there. But people come up to me all the time. I'm like, yeah, I see you all the time on TV. And my son loves you or my daughter loves you. And I'm taking pictures with these little kids. And it's just crazy.
That's funny. That's Big Daddy's house, man. You know? How about that?
Yeah, it is. It is. I told you the story. I told you the story about the guy from Australia that came up to me.
No.
I didn't tell you that story?
No.
There was a guy from Australia that was visiting his family in Philadelphia who saw me on TNT during one of the games that was on. And he came up to me and was like, look, I purposely came to the game because I wanted to meet you. And when he took the picture, I felt his body shaking like he was standing next to Will Smith or something. And I'm like, I'm just the average guy. I'm like, calm down. He was just shaking. Like, I just really wanted to meet you, and I'm glad I had this opportunity. He took the picture, and he's just staring at me. His body's shaking. I'm like, dude, relax. You're making me feel creepy now. Like, enough, enough, go away. But it was just cool. It was just cool. Like, and I didn't realize that, you know, a lot of these games are shown all over the world, and people all over the world have seen me at one time or another. Even when I did the thing with Charles Barkley and Shaq, a lot of people saw that and just thought it was hilarious. It's like even media people from, like when the media comes from L.A., they know who I am. They come up and say, right? Like, yeah, I seen, you know, we, you know, shot you, you know, when we're panning through the crowd and, you know, and we know who you are and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, well, who are you? You know, it's just a trip. It's a lot. It's funny. Especially tomorrow, there's going to be a whole bunch of media people down there. So my picture's going to be all over the place tomorrow after the Wing Bowl.
Yeah, and you know what? It's like that's really become like a nationwide thing now. There's going to be like nationwide media there.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. It's 20,000 people, literally 20,000 people in there watching these people eat wings. It's crazy.
And
the place,
you know,
is packed.
Too bad, like, the link is not, like, closed in, because they could probably start working on filling up the link next.
I think you could. I literally think you could. If the link was a dome, which they should have did anyway, but if the link was a dome, I think you could fill it, the Wing Bowl.
That's too funny. Now, how about the Sixers? We haven't talked this year at all about the Sixers, and last year we talked a lot, and it was just a very frustrating year. And this year,
yes,
it seems, you know, we know they're not that good of a team. So I think everybody, you know, just appreciates when they go out and when they do win. But it seems like
mm-hmm.
there's a more of a promise to them this year where things seem better.
Exactly what you just said is exactly what the feeling is down here. Because we know this is the tank season. Everybody knows this season's getting tanked. And we're not going to win a bunch of games. If we win 20 games, we'll be lucky.
Right.
But it's the promise of 2 or 3 years through draft picks and through free agency that eventually there's going to be a championship. And that's what we're looking forward to. You know, because this is one, probably one of the best drafts they've had since LeBron and Carmelo came out. So we'll be deep in the draft this year. So we're going to get good draft picks, one. Two, we have an excellent coach. We have an excellent coach who came from San Antonio, and San Antonio has been in the playoffs deep and in the finals. You know, they're always somewhere around. So we got a good coach from San Antonio who's really coaching these young guys well. And I love what I see out of Michael Carter Williams. If he develops a consistent jump shot and able to hit from outside, he's going to be one of the top point guards in the league. Because if you ask me personally right now, he's in the top 10 right now.
I think he is a big reason why that team has promise. If it wasn't for him,
yes.
I think it would be a very dismal season. But he is a bright point to that team. And it seems
yes,
a real positive thing for fans to look forward to.
The first game out the box, when we played Miami and beat Miami, I saw this kid play. And I'm like, oh, this kid's the truth. I'm like, this kid is the truth. And even when he got injured for that little bit of time, You see the difference from when he's there and from when he's not there. This kid is good. He hustles. He's all over the place. He's humble. He's approachable. No, and now no disrespect to Allen Iverson. Love him to death. But he's not like Allen Iverson. I think he's going to be a step better than Allen Iverson.
Well, plus he shows up for practice.
Yeah, one, he practices. Practice. Practice. I'm going to make my team better from practicing. Practice. And I mean, don't no disrespect. Allen Iverson was a great fixer, and he did what he did. We went to the finals with him, whatever. But that's the past. This kid is the future of the team. He's putting up pretty much the same numbers that Allen Iverson put up his rookie year. So, and this kid slid to 11th in the draft. So imagine all the teams are going to regret letting this kid slide all the way through the draft like that.
Right.
He's
going
to be the future of that team.
Cool.
And I just hope, like, and guaranteed that Evan is going to be gone in the next week or so. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Because if they really wanted him, they would have resigned him by now.
Yeah.
And the trade deadline is up in the next 2 weeks. And they have not resigned him. They're not going to let that trade deadline pass and not sign him. So either you're going to trade him, or at the end of the season, Evan's going to go anyway.
Gotcha.
So
cool.
Evan's not going to be there.
Well, there you go.
Well, there's a lot going on as far as the team and everything, so I'm just looking forward to the future. In 3 years, I'm going to be in a parade while we're going down Broad Street after winning the championship.
They're going to have you on the back of one of them trucks with that team.
You're damn right. I just want to be on the, I just want to be part of the parade. I just want to wave down Broad Street saying, I did my time. I earned that. I've earned it.
Would they give you a ring?
Would they give me? I should get one. I think I deserve it.
Oh, too funny.
Yeah.
All right, so everybody tomorrow, if you're going down to Wing Bowl tomorrow morning, look up for Big Daddy. You can't miss him. Hit him up. He's got passes to cheerleaders. He's got some Sixers tickets if you're one of the lucky ones. And say hi to Big Daddy. Tell him you heard him on Totally Driven Radio. And 10-1, he's going to have a crowd of strippers around him. So you can't.
10-1, yeah, it's going to be a crowd of strippers around me. If you see me down there, I got free passes to cheerleaders. I got tickets. Come say hi. Come take a picture with me. Bay, is always a pleasure coming on your show. I appreciate it. You're a good friend. We've been friends for a long time. I wish your family well. God bless you all.
You too, man. Hey, before I let you go, I got to ask you, Super Bowl Sunday, who you liking?
I'm going to say Denver. I like, I think Peyton Manning is probably one of the best quarterbacks of all time. And I hate to say that, but I'm just going to put it out there. And I think that even though Seattle's defense is tight, I just think Peyton's offense is a little bit better. And Seattle got to be able to score, and I don't know how well they're going to be able to score, to be honest with you, because I watched the NFC Championship game, and when they scored, it seemed like it was just like big plays, but it wasn't like consistent to me.
Right.
You know, and to be honest with you, the one play where the guy broke his leg when he got the fumble, whatever, he had control of the ball when he fell. But they let him go. But anyway, is what it is.
All right. So Big Daddy's down for Denver. Okay.
I'm thinking Denver.
If you're not doing
Denver
nothing, come up to Hooters.
Denver by 10.
Come up to Hooters, eat some wings, and watch some of the game with me.
All right. I might
I'll
do
talk
that.
To you.
All right, then.
I'll talk to you Saturday. I'll let you rest tomorrow after Wing Bowl.
Yeah, give me a call Saturday afternoon because I'm going down to Delaware for the 87ers game. The Sixers D-League team, I got season tickets for them, too, so I got to make an appearance down there.
Look at you. All right, Big Daddy, have fun tomorrow.
All right, buddy.
We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, man. Bye. All right, everybody, there he is from the 76ers, Big Daddy. He is a piece of work, Nick. He really is.
Man, he's all over that team. He's like the mascot.
He really, I don't know why they just don't make him, like, the official mascot. Did you ever see the segment on, it was one of the NBA shows, like, when it was, like, a game of the week or something, like, on NBC or something, and they made him fan of the week, and they did, like, a whole interview segment with him. Did you ever see that?
No.
Oh, it's hysterical. hysterical. It's probably on YouTube, and he's in the seat, and they're interviewing him, and the host of whatever the show was, NBA This Week or whatever, they're going back and forth, and then they started dancing. Oh, it was hysterical. Hysterical. But, all right, well, our final guest of the night is on the line, and he's waiting patiently. And we're going to venture into somewhere we haven't really ventured that much into in a while. Let's welcome the one, the only, Mr. The Beast, Rich the Beast Ortiz. Rich, how you doing? Welcome to Totally Driven Radio.
What's going on, Phil? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming aboard, man. So, being a former football player, we've got to ask you right out of the gate, who do you like, Denver or Seattle?
Well, I worked for John Elway. I played for him, and I lived up there in Colorado in the Arena Football League at one point in my career. And, you know, was warming up with him on the sidelines. My favoritism goes to the Broncos, but if we want to break it down from a factual standpoint, we're looking at Peyton Manning, a guy who's writing history, who's going to be a Hall of Famer someday. And but if you look at it, overall percentages on wins and Super Bowls, games overall, defense wins championships. So let's just take Peyton out of the equation, and let's just look at it, you know, who's got the better defense. And, you know, I think Denver has a edge with the defense there. And, you know, plus I don't know if Seattle's going to be able to put points on the board and make the crucial right decision at the right time like the Mannings are bred to. So, Denver.
Denver. Wow, we got two Denvers. Yeah, I want to say Denver, and mainly because of the whole Peyton Manning factor, but something about Seattle just scares me. And throughout the season, early in the season, I was like, all right, you know, they're a good team, they're a good team. And then towards the end of the season, I just kept saying to myself, like, this team is no joke. They are for real. It killed me to admit it about Seattle because of that whole thing last year when they had that when they had the scab refs. And they had that,
sure.
I think it was, you know, that whole play where they won the game, and they were just so cocky about it, and it just rubbed me the wrong way about that team ever since. But I got to give them credit; they're a damn good freaking team.
Yes, sir. They wouldn't be there if they weren't. I mean, all those teams in the playoffs are, you know, they always got anyone can go, and it comes down to, you know, a lot of final plays and. It's really not beating yourself first. Eliminate mistakes is really the first thing. Whoever has the least amount of mistakes wins the turnover game is going to win the ball game.
Yeah, that's what it's going to come down to.
Just my guess, but you heard it here. You know, that's just my guess. Plus, they simulated the new Madden 2014. Every year they simulate the Super Bowl, and they had the Broncos in overtime with a field goal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Interesting.
That's funny. Now, you played football at all levels. I mean, going from college to NFL, you played in Canada, XFL, Arena Football League. Which was your most enjoyable as a football player?
Well, man, that's hard to put it on one because I've always been a person that just really gone after, what I get full enjoyment out of in life. What really, I think that's very important in life. Do what you enjoy. I think it makes for a happier house when you're having fun what you're doing. But, you know, to pick just one league, of course you say the NFL because it's the highest level, and you're looking around the locker room having an aha surreal moment, just like, with professional wrestling. But, warming up playing catch with Elway in the sideline before the games as a fullback linebacker in the Arena Football League with him. And he's going, hey, man, go down there. Let me throw some balls back and forth and just shooting the stuff around. That's cool. That's really cool. You know, I cherish that kind of stuff. But in the XFL, though, now I'm in my glory. It's the best of both worlds, both of my dreams when I was a child. And I was really disappointed I didn't go through. But, we're just starting to have a little bit of fun with that stuff, speaking on stage at the Epcot Center and whatnot, down in Orlando about, that'd be about 8 years ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, with the Arena Football League, it doesn't get like a lot of press or credit. I've been to a lot of games here in Philly for the Philly Soul, and it's always such a fun, fast-paced, exciting game. And I just wish they would, like, become bigger.
Sure, yeah. I remember playing against Philly when Jon Bon Jovi ran the team over there in those arenas, and, you know, guys were making six figures for 16 weeks. And, you know, like you said, the guy has been there, a high-scoring game, different kind of game, a lot of hitting that wall, has never lost a battle. And, you know, it's something different, though. You know, professional wrestling, it's good to have different venues that are doing different styles of, you know, that type of trade. So it's
right.
Workers, and it's also good for the people.
Yeah, now, yeah, a lot of, you know, former football players go into the world of wrestling, so yourself included, and you said a few minutes ago that it was one of your dreams as a kid, so I guess you were a big wrestling fan growing up.
Sure, it was a big part of my great-grandmother, you know, my grandfather watching, and, you know, it was cool because his dying days were watching wrestling and got to see me on television. And when I was a kid, my dad, I remember him playing professional wrestling in the living room and going, check these guys out. And he's marking out over there, big old jock. And he was, you know, he got asked by the Macho Man's brother, Lenny Poffa, down in Arizona back in the day when WWE was running through there, you know, but he just had a family. And I heard that story as a kid, too. I was 10 years old. I said, I want to do this. What is this? All this stuff. And I hear these stories later. It's all kind of tied together. Yeah, good memories, you know, joking around with the pops and, you know, just act like characters and, you know, roughhousing each other up. I mean,
that's awesome.
I was 10 years old. I said, hey, man, I want to do this and pro football and play football, too, when I get older. He says, oh, my son, the dreamer, you know, pat me on the head. Like, all right, kid.
Now, let me ask you this, because I was a worker, too. I worked for the original ECW. I was one of the Dudley Boys, the original Dudley Boys.
Oh, dude. Hey, now tell me about the nostalgia there. I mean, I've watched every single year. I mean, the matches, a different style getting over in Philly. I mean, tell me about your experience over there. I mean, is it different than anywhere else in the world?
Dude, that ECW arena in 95 and 96 when I was there, there was nothing like it. There truly was nothing like it. Especially, like, you know, the Dudleys at the time when we first started out, we were, you know, just like the sideshow circus. And we really weren't doing much. And then when Devon came in, they really started to pit Bubba against Devon and the whole thing. And they were letting us really break out and become more hardcore and stuff like that. And we started really getting over the crowd. Forget it. I mean, going through that crowd and having them as your backup, it was just an incredible feeling, you know?
Yeah, man. It's so electrifying. It's beyond. I think it's because of that passion and that commitment are going head on with the worker and the fan. It's like, and also like you're saying, here's this open springboard. Here's this another, you know, venue where, you know, we've got a different product and, it's people really appreciate it. It becomes real. They say it's phony, but not down there at in the extreme on the 2300 Richter and Swanson Arena down there, man. It's
you know, it's funny too because I was there. It was last year. They put out, there was a documentary put out, Barbed Wire City, and I went down for the premiere, and I took my wife and my my daughters down there with me, so we got to watch it. And after it was over, you know, they're redoing the building down there, and it had, like, the old dressing room area was all just, like, tarped off. And I walked back there just to walk around, and, you know, a lot of the spray paint from back in the 90s on the wall, spray paint ECW and stuff was all still back there. And it literally brought tears to my eyes. It was just very emotional and just really remembering all the memories of that building. I mean, it was just truly a magical building that was just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's an honor and it's such a privilege. You know, I think you did a good job explaining, and that's the kind of sweat and blood that's in that arena, and that's what's pulsating in there on the edge of a revolution, always in that place. And that's why it's such an honor and privilege to be wrestling there, and it just it makes you want to just keep elevating your game every single time you go out. I mean. It's a beautiful thing, huh?
Yeah, I used to say, like, about that building back in the day, kind of like the old Frank Sinatra song, New York, New York. I would say if you can make it there in that building, meaning is if you can get over with the fans in that building, you can get over anywhere. So if you can make it there, you can make
Amen.
It anywhere.
Yeah, it's a different breed of crowd in that Philly area. And, you got a lot of blue collar, working class. That's tough. They tell it like it is, and they ain't afraid to. They go shoot some pool and bust some beer bottles over your head.
Yep. Yeah.
They like it. You know what I mean?
Just a typical Saturday night at the bingo parlor.
Yes. Yeah. So like you said, it's like, hey, make me laugh. You know what I mean? Do something. That crowd is, you got to come with it.
This is true. Now, you were saying, I guess when you were younger, your grandfather or whatever got you into wrestling, got you interested in it?
No, I mean, I didn't find out about that till later on. And the whole thing about my great-grandmother and him, that was it was kind of escapism at that time, rough times and stuff. And, I remember being around 10 years old and watching TV in the other room, cause mom's watching something in the other room and just acting a fool, man. And just going, man, what is this? Like, what are these guys? They were larger than life. That was, the 80s and,
right.
And 90s, and it was like, man, what are these? What planet are these guys from? What is this? These are character athletes, ass kickers, this is awesome. And I was like, man, I'm thinking to myself, man, I would love to do that. That's what these guys do. This is their superheroes for a living. Obviously you don't know the other side of the business, but, that was my fondest memory. You're right. Yeah, how about that? Hello.
I'll tell you what,
that won't go away, right?
When I left the business, I said I'm one of the smartest people in the business because I got out.
Come on. Hey, it's like that bad girlfriend that does you bad, but she all that love is so good when it's good, but when it's bad, it is bad.
It is bad. This is true.
And
that's funny.
Hey, and it's you can't fall in love with them kind. You can't make a whole housewife kind. You're trying to make a housewife out of her.
Not wrestling. You can't make wrestling a housewife.
No way, man.
Now, you trained down in Ohio Valley?
Yeah, that's where I started. Soon I got done with a ball. I was chomping the bit, actually, 4 years prior when I was in the CFL. And, plus I'm watching The Rock blow up, and I'm playing the CFL. I was just hearing he'd been cut 2 years before, 3 years before. And it was about maybe 3 years, and I was thinking, man. And then I ended up getting a roommate that was Mike Lawson was roommates with The Rock down there at the U. And he's like, man, my boy, I'm hearing all this stuff. And we're watching him go, man, this guy's, man, and that. I'm going, wait a second, man, I kind of got caught up in this whole football dream kind of thing. Man, I got to get under this wrestling dream. And then I bumped shoulders with Stu Hart. I got a shoot interview with him, acting a fool, not knowing anything about the business. And, going down to Stampede Wrestling and checking some shows out. And then there's another guy who used to act like a wrestler back in the locker room. And that's when I had a character, Atlas the Bone, and he was just like a locker room character, and we just talked noise, the brothers, and I go into my wrestling character and put in place, it was a good laugh, good times, man, good memories.
That's funny. So who were your actual trainers then, down in Ohio Valley?
Alice, Rip Rogers was my first one. And
okay,
then,
the
yes, sir, The Hustler, which is that classic old school style. And then Al Snow became my second trainer from there. And then Hoot Gibson, Robert Gibson, who I still talk to. I actually talked to him about the show, the last show. And, you know, I mean, come on, he's an eight-time world champion, Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, you know, he spent a lot of time with me, and those are the first guys starting out. Then I went up to Richard, Dr. Tom. Then, you know, Ricky Steamboat started coming in, Anderson DeMolink, all those guys started coming in. And then after I got released from the WWE, I was moving in with Razor Ramon, a.k.a. Scott Hall.
Okay.
And I lived there for about a year, and we got on the road together, did a little show together, and he was just teaching me a whole nother side to the business and a whole nother side to working, talking about, you know, Hulk Hogan's psychology and Dixon and what he was doing, you know, and what he, you know, what you know, just comparing different levels, different ways of psychology and working. And Shawn Michaels, he was talking about, you know, the stories and the psychology when they're on the road. And, I mean, I was just taking it all in, and we got some Dick Murdoch. I got every single match Dick Murdoch, his career from beginning to end. And, you know, Scott was tagging with Murdoch at one time. And just listening to those stories and watching those matches over and over and over, and then watching big Hollywood stuff, you know, like Elvis. And, you know, why, where is he on the stage? Why? What's he doing this? Why do people, you know, and look at movies.
Right.
And then he's showing me the music Mr. Perfect would show him when they're on the road, Henny, when they're on the road, and the songs. He say, hey, listen to this. This is the business right here. And, you know, and just, man, it was a dream come true, because that's how I wanted to do that prior to going to WWE. But when I got there, you know, they shot me straight up, and I'm going, man, hey, I know. I've been involved with football for 22 years. You know, and I know how much time you got to put in your craft before you get to the top, and you have something worthy. But you know, that's my story. That's just how it was to be. But it's interesting now. You know, I'm watching all these ECW matches, and here I am in that arena now. I'm sitting in this locker room with these guys. Like you said, man, it's emotional, and it means something, man, to be there. I mean, and it's like, man, this is why I got into with this. This kind of fulfillment right here with the people, yourself. Yeah, it's about the money too. Don't get me wrong, because, you know, we live in a monetary system. You know, a nice guy doesn't pay your hospital bill. So, but you know, that's what you really get in for. And for those to be groomed by those guys like Scott Hall and have those guys where you're on the road and after the match you're talking about it and learning right there and learning, you know, the difference in how these guys are tying up these big Hollywood types versus, you know, these other guys that are working these other styles. It's just, you know, and then, you know, in this day and age, I feel like you really got to go where, do the territory where you can go, move on, get grooming where you can with a mentorship with one of these old dinosaurs, they call it the dying breed, you know, and just travel around. Like, that's what Bubba, he although at TNA's, his little training facility for about, I'd say, almost a year, and that's what he says, man, just travel around, do all this. And then I got involved with jiu-jitsu, you know, kind of just transferring some of emotions when I was a little bit more immature as a young man, and just really got into jiu-jitsu, and I've lost one match in 5 years. I'm an international champion, purple belt, and and a 2-state champion, a submission heavyweight grappling champion. You know, and it was all because someone told me I'd never be a technical wrestler. Now here I am, international level, getting ready for Worlds, and I'm wrestling at ECW, and man, and you know, I've had the tutelage, and all these dreams had come true. Just, it was inside out, so to speak. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, and you said a lot that is really important, especially for people who are just getting into the wrestling business, that they really need to, like, realize, like, you don't just sit and watch Raw and think you're going to become a wrestler. I mean, not only do you have to train in the ring, in the gym, it's also a lot of psychology, and you literally are going, like going to class, like you're saying, you would watch tapes and this and that. I mean, I remember going, being in school, and my teachers would be like, watch these matches, watch this worker, and just take notes. And then I would literally sit there with a notebook and take notes and write down spots and then go back to class and work on spots and work and figure out how this worked and that worked. And once you're doing all that, it's one thing. But then to put all that in front of a crowd and learn how to work the crowd on top of it, it's a whole other thing. I mean, it's a nonstop learning.
Why they're chanting, "You suck dick."
Right,
in the ECW arena.
Yeah, exactly.
F you. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, brother. It's a lot, you know. And yeah, but that was a good thing too about the release for me is cause I got to go hone my craft. How I, you know, bring back that old realism where those old shooters and hookers, that stuff was real. Those were real tough guys in there. But you know, don't get me wrong, that you look at that old wrestling style doesn't really, you know, it's not top card like, you know, like Razor would say, you know, there's a different style you work, you know. Hogan would say the same thing, and Shawn Michaels, you know, from the stories I've been heard. So it's, you know, but in this day and age, there's a lot smarter crowd, a lot smarter. And, you know, some of those moves that don't translate very well, transitioning, they just don't because of MMA. And I know it's a different product and all that stuff, but I'm just talking about, you know, sometimes when you watch something, you go, why is that kind of looking corny? Why isn't that translating, like, in a more of a real sense? And then the guys that are doing that, they're called some of the best wrestlers in the world, like a Daniel Bryan, where you're mixing in both.
Yeah.
What's your take on that Daniel Bryan thing going on? Do you think that's a work, or do you think it's for real?
The CM Punk thing?
No, weren't they saying a bunch of fans talking about that Daniel Bryan's not going to be WrestleMania or something?
Supposedly the other night after the Royal Rumble, he was tweeting out stuff about that WWE was holding him back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do you think that's a worth? Do you think that's his gimmick now? Do you think that's become his gimmick now? At first, kind of no, but it's kind of turned into his gimmick. Just because you know how the biz is, you think everything's a worth. You know, everything is a worth.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
So.
You know what? At first, I instantly thought it was a worth because I don't see them being that vocal like that on social media. Being a disgruntled employee like that, and especially Vince not being furious.
Right. I
so
can see
I,
if you had $6 million in the bank account, CM Punk, but not when you're trying to get in where you fit in, like Too Short would say on the West Coast.
Yeah. The whole CM Punk thing, I most definitely think is a work. And I think if it's done right, like they did this thing with him a couple years ago, and it's like it was going great, and then they just killed it. So I think
I was like, man, they got some magic on top. Finally, got some magic. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's super magic.
Right. They really need to. If this is truly a work, go with it. Don't be scared to go with it, and go with it, and see what you can do with it.
Amen, man.
Now you had just mentioned about like. Wrestling crowds are really smart today. For you yourself, do you prefer to work in front of the smart marks, or would you rather work in a crowd that's more that WWE child-based crowd?
Either. I prefer to work in that Philly crowd, bro. I prefer to be in the trenches, man, where my boots are going to get dirty, and I'm going to get a little bit bloody, and we're going to see what you're really made of, you know? I mean, come on, brother. I mean, you think any of those guys want to come over and battle for the top? I'm going to work my way up that ladder, God willing, if I'm still alive. But, you know, and earn myself a title shot and earn myself, you know, every inch down there. And then you think any of those guys from WWE are going to want to come down and challenge title for title? You think they're going to want to? Come on, brother. You know how they get down in Philly down there.
Yeah, and you know what, too? Like, when I look at the WWE roster, I mean, first off, and I've said this many times, I really don't even watch wrestling anymore. Just because, being from where I've gone from the worker standpoint, I've promoted shows. I ran an organization for 7-8 years. When I watch it, I get nuts. Because then I start picking out, like, why are you doing this? It doesn't make sense. Why aren't you doing this? It should be done like this. And I just go bananas. And then I start wanting to, like, promote shows and do this. And my wife just wants to, like, strangle me. So I don't even watch it to put that drug back into my system. But...
Sure.
You know what I mean? So,
it looks like they're moving in a direction with the internet more and more, and you know that's where everything's going to, and how they're switching over with their programming, and I mean, you know how powerful that is, and how much money that equates when you have a large following on the internet. That's
absolutely.
That's the big lever. So, you know. It's hard because of, traditional values, and then you have the evolution. It just has to occur. You know, you can say the same thing to football. You know, a traditionalist goes, oh, what the hell kind of game is this? Spread out. You can't hit the correct way. Hitting in the head. Are you kidding me? That's how I earn my living. You know, what is this targeting? Come on, and pretty soon they're going to have flags on themselves.
Right.
You know, so I mean, you can say that and get all disgusted and all the penalties they throw, and it's, you know, and I mean, you can go a million things with that, but you know, we're talking about, you got to keep it the same. I was talking to my two black belt judo guys from Russia, and they were saying the same thing. They're kind of disgusted about judo because it's, you can't do this and that. It's more geared towards big upper body throws. You can't grab the legs now. And so, but at the same breath, though, we came to the conclusion, stuff's got to evolve, but just keep at least 80% of the traditional in there because, I mean, it works. It works. Look at these second and third and fourth generation wrestling families, and that's what you have there.
Yeah,
so,
and
yeah, I hate to see
that
get lost too, brother. It can be, but you know, it's going in a direction that may be ahead of our what we're seeing. And obviously, he's got the $1 billion in the bank.
You know, and that was kind of where I was going. Where like a lot, when I look at the roster now, like most of the guys, like I don't know who they are, and then the other half of the roster, it's all second and third generation guys. Where it's all the sons now or the daughters, and I think to myself, did they ever really have to like truly pay their dues? You know what I mean?
They're in it for life, brother. They're in it for life. What do you mean, dude? Does that mean something if your dad came? He worked for me his entire life. He worked for me and helped me help feed my family, and I helped him feed his family. Does it? And he has a kid. And he knocks on my door one day, and he goes, yo, did he give my kid a chance? Well, let me see here. You worked for me for 30, 40 years. You were never sick. You worked with a broken back, legs, arms. I think I could give him a chance.
Right.
I mean, I think that's all that's happening. And you got to earn it. You got to put it in. But you're not going to learn that family psychology, and they're not going to let you go there unless they feel they have already done that. So, I mean,
yeah. It's
– I'm going to offer that to your pops, you know what I mean, to you, you know what I mean, because of your pops. You know, I don't even need to know you. I just know your pops, and he worked for me, so I know what kind of guy he is.
Right.
Plus,
yeah,
that's good business, and two, and you're keeping a good foot of the psychology in there, too, because you see, we're fighting against, I mean, look on the indies. You look at the mad race minus the psychology going on, I mean, and it's, you know, anyone can be open up a promotion and run a show, and but doesn't mean there's good psychology in these places.
Oh, right. that's so true. That is
so
true.
So I think
true.
It's good that they, you know, even if they do, you know, I don't know. And then you can look at the guy who's gifted, like a Batista, and you could bitch about that, and say, hey, wait a second, he's just going to come in and take a big money spot. But then you can look on the flip side as a businessman and go, but wait a second, he's got higher ratings than all you guys. Isn't this what the game's about? You know, but, you know, and what, you're telling me you guys are all working together as a team now? We're all working together as a team? Like John Elway would have the team and Peyton Manning would be running? You mean we're running like that now? See, I've been, you know, I've been groomed with world championship teams, you know, and the mentality of John Elway. But I had to come to the business, and it's a different business, and it's a different mentality. And so, you know, I think that's a factor in there. Would you agree or disagree?
I would totally agree. Totally agree. Yeah, I mean, I you know, a lot of it's frustrating too. Like you were saying, with a lot of people, you know, can just start running wrestling shows. There's no psychology, there's no this, and they don't know the true back. You know, the true background, the true history, the true heart of wrestling, and they don't know the teamwork, and they're out for themselves to put themselves over, and it just makes a bad name all around on the indie scene where you don't have, you know, that unity. Kind of, you know, you look at what ECW was.
Well, that's the ECW locker room you're talking about, which is different than any other locker room in the world. Is that, do you mean that, brother?
Yeah, yeah. See, and that's what I got used to.
That's special, man. I mean, how nice is that, Matt? That's what I'm saying. There's so many intangibles, and that's why you were asking me before why I picked there. There's another reason.
Yeah,
I play a character when I go in there that's just, you know, brash, uppity, classy, you know, bringing in a college degree, you know, chisel, all that stuff. But I'm really, you know, the common man, man. I work with my hands. I got a simple life. I appreciate these little things, and you know, just like what you do and what you're talking about, just like those Philly people, you know. But I just happen to play the bad guy when I come to town. And well, I have to bring some Lysol with me and disinfect that place and every piece of trash in there. God, I got the dirty job of having to clean that city up. It's gonna take forever, brother.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on now. Well, all right. So now you're in Extreme Rising, and you debuted at their last show at the arena, right?
Sure.
And then you're the next show. It's February 8th out in Pittsburgh. You're working against Luke Hawk, which he's been he's like the new hot name on the scene. So it should be a great match.
What's your take on him? What's your take on him? And you know. I've studied tape. I just, you know, because I was hearing the same thing, and the guy is highly respected, and he's beaten a lot of champions that come out of that extreme arena down there, 2300. I mean, you know, he's beaten Matt Hardy, who, you know, is an icon superstar, well, arguably. I mean, you've got Steve Richards, who's the champion over there right now. Jerry Lynn, who's another respected name. I mean, he's got a lot of notches on his belt, to say the least. And I guess he's been on the indie scenes for about, 13 years, 12 years, something?
Oh, really? Has it been that long? See, I haven't really known much about him until this past year and a half with Extreme Rising. And that's exactly what I keep hearing, is a lot of respect about him. And I haven't seen any of the matches, because, like I said, I haven't really been watching wrestling. But, I mean,
well,
from what I
hear... Well, you think you
might
tune in? Me and this dude are going to go toe-to-toe, brother. You know, and it's that, you know, and, you know, doesn't it take a special partner, too, though, to be able to put those matches on there over at Extreme Right? Yes. It's not for everybody, is it? And not everybody...
Nope.
Can bring the best out of him. Not everyone wants to go that level all the time. But when you got another guy who does, that's mad, and that's what that place is about. And that's what Luke Hawks is quoting that he's all about, you know, and let's do this damn thing already.
All I'm saying, though, is that Luke is
I mean, he can take an ass-whooping, too, as much as he can give one. That's all I'm saying. His stuff in, like, XPW and stuff, I mean, the man takes a beating well.
Well, that's part of the business. That's part of life, isn't it? But it's not about the beating. It's about getting up. I think Cool Hand Luke said it best. You're going to have to kill me.
See, now, I didn't even know so he worked in XPW, too, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been working all over the place, all over the world.
Well, was it under that same name, or was he under a different name?
It was Alter Boy Luke.
Oh, all right.
Oh,
yeah, I'm
Alter
sure you've
Boy,
seen him.
Oh, the
yeah.
Alter Boy's gone bad. Oh, I got some jokes. I got some jokes now.
Now
the
I know.
Alter
okay.
Boy.
Because he used to have like a shaved head before, didn't he, or something?
Yeah, man. I'm a big fan. That's all I'm saying, and I can't wait until February 8th.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good time, man. It's I'm really ready to pull my weight over there. And help create a buzz about a product that, like we're talking about, what we crave. I crave it just like you crave to watch it and see those matches, you know. And what better than you get a front row ticket and the guy's knocking the slobber out of your mouth? You know what I mean? So I'm right there with you guys, man. It's gonna be a damn good time, and I'm looking forward to it. And then plus, there's a lot of the different workers that work that area: Pennsylvania, Maryland, Jersey, New York. All the way down to Philly. So it's cool always to see those guys. For some reason, I get along with those guys, a lot better.
Well, that's always a good thing, too.
Yeah, good people, though. Good people at the end of the day.
Do you think you've worked all around the country. So do you think probably the best talent crop is in the Northeast area?
Yeah, it's all different, you know. You got to have these different styles, but I think they know their stuff more than anywhere in the country right now. I really do. I mean, that you can argue that, you know. But I mean, I don't know. Louisville's got some deep roots there too. But they're popping for a whole different style. But don't kid yourself. You bring this same style into that territory or that state, it's going to get over. I mean. Prime example was Sabu. He did that same style in Japan where he went and got over, never changed it up.
Yeah.
And he was known as one of these innovators who was using the ring, using, his body in ways, doing movesets, doing things that we've never seen before. So, I think that's a big deal.
Now, I'm not going to disagree with him, Dave, and you know that I love Philly and the New York area and all that, hometown and everything, but I've seen out here, like, some amazing athletes that go completely unnoticed when it comes to, like, lucha in sort of Arizona, New Mexico, Las Vegas area as well.
No, yes. Yeah, you got your lucha there. You got some good southern-style wrestling down in the Floridas and the South. I mean, brother, you get it all over the place. It's everywhere. There's good where, and dude, sometimes people get frustrated trying to find the rhyme or reason with, why they're bringing. It's a no-no. Bringing football players in, unless you're going to groom them for at least a couple of years, at least 3 or 4 years before you bring them up. I mean, no one wants to get body slammed or get in the ring with these guys, anyways. Type of thing, but. You got a lot of guys slipping through everywhere, and, it's just, I think this is what it is.
So what are the plans you got coming up for 2014? You got Extreme Rising and...
Yeah, I'm going to go up to Pennsylvania. I'm going to head back to Philly, and then we're going to renegotiate it again at that point and just kind of keep moving forward and see if I can get myself earn myself a title shot here and get in the picture here. Man, I'd have to tell you, I was watching the show in the back and just all the guys, man, just wrestling so hard,
and for so long, so many matches, just, and the fans really appreciate. I mean, it's such a good show. It's refreshing. So I'm just gonna head back to Philly, and then I'm gonna figure everything out. What's gonna go on from there, and you know, just a couple steps at a time. Come on, man. You're lucky to make it out of that place alive. One step at a time.
How about this? Like, here's something I would experience. Like, you know, go work an ECW show, and you know, you have that level of talent. The dressing room, it's truly that family-oriented dressing room. And not only that, it's truly like going to school. It's like a learning situation. It's a fun situation. It's a very social situation. And then you would go, like, work an indie show for somebody else, and it's just like a total cluster. And you're just like,
sure.
What the hell am I doing here?
And everyone's looking at everyone like that too, right?
Yeah.
And what's he doing here? What am I doing? That's how it's all looking back and forth all around. It's just like, what is this? Yeah. That's what we're talking about, though. When any Tom, Dick, or Harry can get their promotion and get it up and running, and then he can make himself the champion.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he goes and marks out on the internet. You know, no, but I mean, don't you see a lot of that? And it's frustrating too. That was always an outlet for that too. If it was brutal like that, you could always go to the dojo. You go sparring. You go compete. You know, and then get to a place where, you know, but. It's dying by the wayside, and those places with that nostalgia electricity are few and far between.
This is true. Wow. All right, so February 8th, everybody out there in Pittsburgh, Extreme Rising, check out Rich the Beast Ortiz, take on Luke Hawks, the ex-altar boy. So I guess you'll be taking him to church.
Praise God.
There you go. All right, so where can we where can everybody find you, get hold of you, bookings or anything else?
Yeah, just hit me up. The easiest is on Twitter at Beast Ortiz. That's really easy to remember. But my real name is Rich Young, and you can hit me up there too.
Cool.
On Facebook, Rich Young at Facebook.
Nice. All right, Rich, well, thanks a lot. It's been a lot of fun. Have fun February 8th, and keep that ECW spirit alive, my friend.
You got it. Hey, and if I just if you could shoot a copy of this over to my Twitter or my Facebook that, with the link, that way I can shoot it around the horn.
You got it.
Thanks, fellas. Hey, good times. I appreciate talking with you guys, and you always make the journey a little bit better, man. I appreciate it. Now go fuck yourselves.
Take it easy, Rich. That was good. It's good talking to somebody who truly, you know, appreciates the business and respects the business. And you can tell the dude is like, he's humbled because he's still learning and getting that chance to learn from, you know, a lot of the big names in the business.
Yeah, it's funny because he actually did a show out here and he worked a couple guys that I'm real familiar with, guys that I was booking like 2 or 3 years ago that are just now starting to get a little bit of recognition. And there was so much conversation we could have had, we would have needed like 2 more hours, man.
And that's always the case too. Like I sit there and I'm watching the clock and I'm like, all right, I have questions and questions and I got to start wrapping up. I was doing the same thing with Tony Luke and Big Daddy. It's just like, and even Danko Jones, I had a bunch more questions and he's like, you know, I got to roll in 5 minutes to head to the studio. I'm like, oh crap, all right.
It's interesting, man, and you know, wrestling has changed so much since that time that it's almost like it's a whole different sport now.
Oh, it totally is. Totally is. So, all right. So, thanks to Extreme Rising for that. Thanks to Rich for that. February 8th. Check out Extreme Rising's website, extremerising.com. You can follow them on Twitter as well. At Extreme Rising, and if you're not in the Pittsburgh area, you can watch it online with their the pay-per-view. of the show. So go check that out. I think it's actually, I think it's through High Spots. I forget. So
yeah, I was going to say, I watched it through High Spots, yeah.
Okay, cool. I didn't want to say it was through High Spots and it didn't. High Spots, that would have sucked. Yeah, so all right, so let's take our last commercial break, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up.
Yo, monkeys, it's me, DDP. And you, well, you monkey, you're listening to Totally Driven Radio. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Bang!
The Crispy Noodle Podcast. Did you hear this?
EA Sports has cut ties with the famed golfer for their upcoming golf video game, Tiger Woods PGA Tour. He is in the danger zone.
Do you just want to leave it on, Rich?
Maybe. But yeah, you're right. Tiger Woods, unfortunately, he finds himself in the zone of danger.
The zone of danger. You're just having far too much fun.
Do you want me to go back into the danger zone?
No.
All right.
Let's stay out of the danger zone. I want to be in the safe zone. No?
No.
Doesn't have the same ring?
No. That has no ring.
No ring?
That has no ring. Danger zone or nothing at all. How dare you, Mike? Yeah!
What about, like, the in between, like, the precarious zone? What about the slightly cautious zone?
No!
It's just the danger zone?
That's it!
Okay. Well, you know...
I'm sorry, I love Top Gun.
No, really? I couldn't tell. Just played Danger Zone 7 times.
Check out thecrispynoodle.com.
Please join the Millbourne Fire Company at their annual fundraising event. All money and contributions are tax deductible. The event is going to be held on Saturday, March 8, 2014, from 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. at the Liberty Bowling Center, formerly Garris, at 6505 Market Street in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. Your purchase of a ticket includes food, beer, bowling shoe rental, and door prizes. You must be over 21 to consume alcohol. We also have an ad book and are asking for sponsors. So if you'd like to advertise for your business or just want to buy a page in a book to write us a message, this is a great way to do it. For tickets or more information, please contact Sandy Archie at 610-441-3968 or email her at sandy1027@comcast.net. Please mention this ad when you contact Sandy. The Millbourne Fire Company is an all-volunteer company and relies on funds from the community to operate.
This is Bay Ragney of Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment for Vidian Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. Are you looking to buy a new car or replace your current vehicle? Or are you looking for a dealership that's just going to give you the exceptional service you deserve? You've come to the right place, Vidian. That's right, Vidian has been serving the Delaware Valley with new and used Chrysler, Jeeps, and Dodge cars since 1954. That's 60 years of service with such customers as Philadelphia Eagles' Jason Kelce, Sixers coach Brett Brown, plus former Eagle and the Jeep genie himself, Hollis Thomas. Vidian's also partnered and provides the official vehicles for the Cole Hamels Foundation. Not only all that, but I myself, Bay Ragney, am a customer as well. I just purchased last week a 2014 Dodge Charger RT from Vidian. Vidian also works very close with all the first responders, police, fire, EMT, and all branches of the military. Vidian has a huge selection of new inventory and close to 100 pre-owned vehicles in stock to choose from. Vidian is totally driven to earn your business and give you the best deals on your car purchase. So go to Vidian.com to see their inventory or any information on all the sales they offer. Plus, you can just stop into their showroom at 4951 Westchester Pike in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. Remember, if you want to get driven and stay driven, do it with Vidian.
That's Orlando Jones of Sleepy Hollow, and you're listening to Totally Driven Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back, Totally Driven Radio. All right, winding down the show, 5 minutes left. So, Sunday night, TV Nation, 9 o'clock. Nick, we're going to be going up against the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. We'll catch them in the replay, that's all.
Absolutely. So I just want to forewarn you. I mean, I'm going to go to Hooters and watch the first half, so I might have a little buzz by the time I get home to do the show with you. So be prepared.
Okay, I will. I'm going to be playing, I don't know yet, I'm going to talk a little bit about my interview that we did this week, and we definitely have to talk about Arrow because they dropped a couple big bombshells, and it's going to be interesting, man.
Cool. And I'll have to tell you about the TV I watched this week, and a new show I watched this week is actually an old show, but it returned from their winter break. Dad's returned, so that was another good one. So we'll talk about that one on Sunday night.
And I literally watched it as I was logging in to come on the radio tonight.
How friggin' funny is that show getting?
I hope that it's on for another, 5 years, because it's hilarious, and I love the way it's just unapologetic.
Yeah. and you know what's funny? Every time you can tell when they push the envelope, you just got to watch Seth Green's face because he's trying so hard not to laugh.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. I'll tell you, I'm going to blow your mind, though, with this, and you're going to look for it every single time from now on. Look at Ribisi's wife from the angle that they're trying to hide her pregnancy.
Oh, really?
You won't be able to see it if you're not looking for it, but look at I'm telling you, I just noticed it tonight, and I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. Just the angles that they're using and stuff it's awesome.
It's funny when you get picked that stuff out, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, let's next week on Totally Driven Radio, we have a few guests lined up already. Actually, we could have four guests lined up. But,
oh, wow.
I'll announce three. How about that? I'll announce three. There we go. All right, we're going to have a country singer, Marshall Dane. We're going to have a former MMA fighter, and now I guess you can consider him an actor, Baz Rutten.
Oh, awesome.
We're also going to have former Playboy Playmate of the Year, as well as reality show star, Celebrity Apprentice, business person, businesswoman, I should say, a whole list of other things under her belt, model. Brandi Roderick will be on the show. Ex-Baywatch, what else? She's done a whole bunch of stuff. So
yeah, man, just so much.
Yeah. So jam-packed show next week. Baz Rutten, Brandi Roderick, and Marshall Dane. And also we could have somebody else, too, that we're going to be taping an interview, but I might save that interview for the following week. So there you go.
Sounds like
jam-packed.
A good time, man. I can't wait.
Jam-packed. So I want to thank tonight Tony Luke for calling in. Thanks also to Danko Jones, and thanks to Rich the Beast, and, of course, to our good friend Big Daddy. Let's see, what else? This week coming up, we got TV Nation Sunday night. We have Monday night Fork Off with Chrissy. Tuesday night, the Box of Rock show and the big debut of Man Cave Quarterback. Wednesday night, we have the Brocast, which debuted last night with huge numbers. Congrats to Mikey and Jake with the Brocast. And then at 9 o'clock, we have the Crispy Noodle. And then next Thursday, we return. So there you go.
Man, everything just keeps growing and growing, man.
It does. There was other stuff I wanted to get into tonight, too. Like, I wanted to get into the whole Justin Bieber thing again, but why waste my breath on it? You know what I mean? So, anything else you want to close with?
No, I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good for this week. Just my votes for Luke Hawks and Seattle.
Luke Hawks and Seattle. I guess I should throw a name out there. You know what? I want Denver to win, but I think Seattle's going to win. So I'm going to go Seattle with you. So there you go.
Sounds good.
All right, until next week, stay driven.